the war inside my head. Won't take a day off, I'll be dead. My icy fingers claw your back. Here I come again.
WRIF's award-winning Night Call, Detroit's longest-running phone-in talk show with Peter Werby and Jolene Jordan. Peter and Jolene will be voicing their opinions, and they want to hear yours. Call them at 313-298-WRIF. That's 313-298-9743. Now, here are Peter and Jolene.
It is us. Hi, Jolene.
Hi, Peter.
Welcome to Detroit's most progressive political talk show, committed to peace and social and economic justice.
We are.
And I just mostly just put that across to mess with a couple people's minds, because they're progressive and they go, they get fraud. Boy, we were just talking about this. Oftentimes before the show, I do a round, as we call it, of Tai Chi Chuan. Tai Chi, right?
Yes.
But I got so stuck on watching Batman.
Yeah.
The Dark Knight.
A little pre-show. Whew. Dark Knight.
That
action,
is a
huh?
Dark, grim, and I've seen it before.
I couldn't do it. Yeah. It really creeped me out.
It's a very, very disturbing movie, indeed.
Yeah.
All right, this is Night Call, WRIF's phone-in talk show. I'm Peter Werby. Jolene Jordan is here as well, my co-host. Our phone number is 313-298-WRIF.
313-298-9743. Stephanie will take your calls.
Yes, and the reason we tell you that is because we're a phone-in talk show. We give our ideas, you give yours, and that's the deal. If you'd like to email us, short ones, please, and they may, I stress, get read on the air. Or if you're bashful, call talkyes@yahoo.com. We're also on Facebook. It's facebook.com/nightcall.
It is.
When are we going to make that more active?
We keep talking about it. We keep threatening.
Yeah. And Dear Stephanie puts together a podcast that's available at noon on Mondays. And I don't want to discourage anybody from listening live, but if you subscribe, you get it mailed to you. You can go to WRIF.com and kind of follow everything.
Yeah.
Or you can go to my website, Peter Werby, WERBE.com. So, I suppose we got to talk about, because it's talk shows also, besides talking about serious stuff, talk about a lot of nonsense. And
sure.
maybe it's not even nonsense in the sense that it is diversionary. So we could talk about some whack job wants to bring guns to this family Royal Oak Festival, Arts, Beats, and Eats. We could talk about the mosque in New York City. You know, we
mm-hmm.
could talk about all these right-wingers are going crazy trying to scare people, saying that Social Security is going to go under and all of that. But those are really diversionary. And, I mean, some of these are worthy talking about. Some guy that's going to come to a festival where I am armed, I'm not real happy with that. And he's going to have his gun on his hip.
Yeah, I saw the picture in the paper today. I just don't.
What was the photo?
I don't get it.
What was the photo?
It was of from him from waist down ordering a Starbucks with that gun. And you could just see it. It was just right there.
Now, what kind of person wants to do that? I mean, for
He's
one thing.
He's got his daughter with him.
It draws all this attention to them, right?
Maybe I think that's what this guy likes.
Right. It is so aggressive.
Yeah.
And so unnecessary.
My eyes would be this yeah. big if I if was and behind
say,
him in
well,
line.
Well, you never can tell what will happen at this Art's Pizza and Eats, right? And so what if something did happen? What, this guy would pull out his gat and start shooting?
Yeah, is he now the police?
Yeah.
Is he now an authority?
I mean, the police, who are trained, who you know have to deal with situations, they frequently wind up shooting one another. I mean, in this, you know, hail of... But I'm getting off on it, and I'm getting off on this tangent, on this diversion, because it's all the same. It's all what we talk about almost every week, and you can say, well, that's not good radio, because what you get... Let's get everybody riled up about guns or, you know, legalization of marijuana, or is that Obama a Muslim? You know, something like that. Why is... Because, here's a nice headline. Detroit, this was the front page lead story of the New York Times on August 13th. Detroit goes from gloom to economic bright spot.
Economic bright spot. This was a happy yeah. headline.
You folks didn't know that, did you? All the people that are suffering from unemployment, foreclosures, and more and more people on food stamps and all of that. You didn't know that we have gone from gloom to economic bright spot. Well, actually, when they're talking about Detroit, what they are really talking about are the auto industry.
Mm-hmm.
One thing that didn't happen, the auto bailout worked, and General Motors is even getting off the dole, and they're going to have this public offering. It might be the largest in stock market history. But this article says, after a dismal period of huge losses and deep cuts, it culminated in the Obama administration's bailout of GM and Chrysler. The gloom over the American auto industry is starting to lift. And, Ford's making a fortune, and they never... they didn't take it. Talks next year on the new contract with the United Automobile Workers could revive old hostilities. In other words, like, maybe those auto workers might want to be paid decently.
Yeah.
What a concept.
Give them back some of those benefits.
Yeah.
The retirees.
Here's what's really happening, though. And this is Bob Herbert's column from, a week or so ago. It's called A Sin and a Shame. He says in the New York Times, the treatment of workers by American corporations has been worse, far more treacherous than most of the population realizes. And this is a corporate newspaper who this paper mostly goes to the upper class, to the ruling class of all, this is kind of a surprise. There was no need for so many men and women to be forced out of their jobs in the downturn known as the Great Recession. Now, this is interesting. He's saying that we take it for granted because things went so bad, people had to be laid off. But here, the recession officially started in December 2007. From the fourth quarter of 2007 to the fourth quarter of 2009, real aggregate output in the U.S., that's, what we're all producing, as measured by the gross domestic product, fell by about 2.5%. Employers cut the payrolls by 6%.
Mm.
If you dig this? This is what's going on here. Still, the improving mood in Detroit reflects the real changes how the automobile industry is doing business. And we're talking about GM is profitable, preparing for one of the biggest stock offerings in American history. That's the one about bright spot. But Bob Herbert says, in many cases, bosses told panicked workers who were still on the job that they had to take pay cuts or cuts in hours or both, and raises were out of the question. And so that's the blackmail again. You got to take these wage cuts or you're out of here. Bob Herbert says, the corporations are making out like bandits. Now they're sitting on mountains of cash, and they're still not interested in hiring to any significant degree or strengthening workers' paychecks, because to them, the coming out of the recession means that they are profitable again. And do I have my... Where is this? About the small percentage of people who actually own most of what's going on. You've seen George Carlin's, they own you.
Yeah,
you're,
right.
Yeah, but I think like the top 1% own 83% of the assets or something like that. Well, they want more. They want more. So this is more social looting. This is more redistribution of income. These whack job Republicans are always talking about, Barack Obama wants a redistribution of income. That would be great, wouldn't it, if it would stop going from us to that small little sliver at the top of the pyramid and started going like the other way, the way it should. right?
Yeah.
Worker productivity has increased dramatically, but the workers themselves have seen no gains for their increased production. It has all gone to corporate profits. This is unprecedented in the post-war years, and he says it's wrong. Well, it's looting. It's absolutely looting. Having taken everything for themselves, the corporations are so awash in cash, they don't know what to do with it all. Citing a recent article from Bloomberg Businessweek, Professor Sum noted that in July, cash at the nation's non-financial corporations stood at $1.84 trillion, a 27% increase over 2007. So the idea that the economy is going down the drain is the middle class is going down the drain. The working class is going down the drain. And the idea, well, here, this will give
more
you
more proof.
Yeah, this will give you an idea. This is from the Free Press Automobile News. The United Auto Workers Union has decided not to go ahead with a vote on a new wage-cutting contract for a General Motors Company stamping plant facing sale. UAW Local 23 in Indianapolis, bargaining chairman Gregory Clark says members won't vote on the proposed contract, which would cut base wages from $29 per hour to $15.50 an hour. Can you imagine that? They are asking their members, or the companies asking the members, to take a 50% wage increase. These people then would go from about $60,000 a year, which allows them to be in the middle class, from working in a factory 40 to 50 hours a week, and instead go to what is essentially the, what they call the near poor, about $30,000 a year. And let's see, J.D. Norman Industries of Addison, Illinois, had asked for pay cuts as a condition for buying the plant. Barring a sale, GM has said it will close the plant next year. This is the word that I'll keep coming back at you with, blackmail. It's always this blackmail. And there's more in the foreign affairs, like the war in Afghanistan. Well, if we get out, this will happen. Of course, if we do stay in, But that's another subject. Let me just stay on this. So here's the blackmail. Will you take a 50% wage cut or we'll close your plant? Okay? Isn't that sort of a gun at your head, speaking of guns? And more from the Times. This is Paul Krugman, who's a Nobel Prize winning economist. I think so. This is what's happening at our end of things. At their end of things, they're making more and more money. This 1%. 99% of us, well, let's say the bottom 80%, are getting progressively looted. The upper 20% doing okay, and then when you start getting into the 90th percentile, and particularly the 95th and above, these are the people that are looting the rest of the classes below them. Paul Krugman says the lights are going out all over America, literally. Colorado Springs has made headlines with its desperate attempt to save money by turning off a third of its streetlights. But similar things are either happening or being contemplated across the nation from Philadelphia to Fresno. Meanwhile, and kind of talks about how we've done everything from the Erie Canal to the interstate highway system, is now in the process of unpaving itself. In a number of states, local governments are breaking up roads they can no longer afford to maintain and returning them to gravel. Education being cut back. We're told that we have no choice. Here comes the blackmail again. That basic government functions, essential services that have been provided for generations, are no longer affordable. And it's true that state and local governments hit hard by the recession are cash-strapped. And that makes sense, right? On the face of it, there's no money. We know that. We know the city of Detroit doesn't have any money. The state of Michigan doesn't have any money. California doesn't have any money. Well, what in the world could we expect from people? Well, here is one interesting thing. General Petraeus, who now is leading the... Was that your phone?
No, it's the computer. I don't know why he is updating. No, I'm not texting. I'm focused on you, Peter.
Here's what General Petraeus is doing in Afghanistan. After he won the control of the command, his insistence was on spending more than $200 million for diesel generators and fuel to increase Kandahar, Afghanistan's electricity supply. So there's money for that. There's $200 million going to provide electricity for the city that probably hasn't ever had it. How about this, too? This is an editorial from the New York Times saying that we believe, this is the Times, not me, the United States has a powerful national interest in Afghanistan in depriving al-Qaeda of a safe haven on either side of the Pakistan-Afghan border. There's about 150 of these guys. We're spending billions and billions and billions of dollars getting our soldiers killed, killing Afghan citizens, and so to contain 150 people. This
That's
is
not even 1%.
No, you know. This country, according to the Times, would also do an enormous damage to its moral and strategic standing if now it simply abandoned the Afghan people to the Taliban's brutalities. Well, the United States set this in motion a long time ago, 30 years ago, when it began intervening in Afghanistan through financing the Mujahideen, which created Osama bin Laden, created the warlords, eventually created al-Qaeda. So now, again, here's the blackmail. Are we going to keep this $200 million, of course, is nothing. It's a minor drop in the bucket compared to the hundreds of billions of dollars that are being spent. You know,
and for what?
Yeah, Randolph Bourne in 1917 said, "War is the health of the state." And for the military-industrial complex, it certainly is.
Mm-hmm.
Here, they also talk about managing Pakistan. Imagine that, managing Pakistan. What if China had a newspaper that had an article that said, managing Canada?
Or managing the U.S.
Yeah. The most alarming parts of those WikiLeaks were the ones that described how Pakistan's military intelligence service was cynically colluding with the Afghan Taliban. So this is our erstwhile ally over there. And here, this is according to the Times, administration has said and done many of the right things to try to change Pakistan's behavior, committing to long-term economic aid. Now, do you understand how many billions and billions of dollars are going to be sent to this government that is hostile to the United States? The majority of people hate the United States, and they are actually aiding the Taliban, who are killing our soldiers and our allies in Afghanistan. And the United States is committed. And it's not the United States, whatever that abstraction happens to be. It's you and me and your parents and people like that who are financing this long-term economic aid to Pakistan so they can take their a bit of it and through their intelligence service, if you can call it that, and send it to the Taliban. All right?
That's right.
Yeah. How about this one? U.S. lawmakers aim to block Lebanon military aid. I said, wow, this sounds like a good idea. Several members of Congress have moved to block U.S. aid to the Lebanese military. Did you know we're financing the Lebanese military, as well as the Pakistan military, and the Saudi military, and the Jordanian military?
We're doing a whole lot of giving.
And the Israeli military, and that is a well-advised pronoun. We. That's where our money's going. It's not here. I mean, do you think for a second, anybody that supports us, I mean, are there people out there that think, yeah, we ought to give billions of dollars to Pakistan and Israel and Jordan and Saudi Arabia and countries like that? I mean, there may be some of you out there, but do you think if you put this to a vote, wouldn't it lose about 90% to 10%? That if we said, well, here, we have these hundreds and hundreds of billions of dollars, we can either send it to these governments, most of, almost, everyone that I mentioned, mm-hmm. use it to oppress some sector or major sectors of their population. The United States has pledged hundreds of millions of dollars in aid to the Lebanese armed forces in recent years. Isn't that nice? And the people that wanted this stop, Representative Howard Berman of California, the Democratic chairman of the House Foreign Affairs Committee, has put a hold on $100 million because they say that it's very possible that the Lebanese army, they're concerned that weapons could fall into the hands of Hezbollah, and that they're concerned that the Lebanese army may be working with Hezbollah in light of last week's deadly skirmishes between the Lebanese and Israeli soldiers. So people like Representative Berman are, you know, what they call friends of Israel. So the concern is not that we're, I mean, for why in the world are we arming both sides? I mean, that's a little crazy.
That is completely insane.
Yeah. But the real problem is, you know, they're always saying, yeah, well, of course we have to have cutbacks. We can't afford it. Well, of course we can't afford it because all of our money is going down this rat hole of militarism. I mean, I know we've got a military-industrial complex, and when Secretary of War Gates says we're going to have a little cutback in the Pentagon budget, and I mean a little, they're talking about a $700 billion military budget for next year. And we have our enemies. Of course, we have our enemies, those 150 Al-Qaeda guys that are holed up in the mountains, probably not even in Afghanistan, but in Pakistan. So it's a ruse. This is not what it's all about. It is about continuing to fund this monstrous entity called the military-industrial complex.
And all of the corporations surrounding it.
Yeah.
Halliburton.
This is from Wired.com. And this, remember, I'm sure you forgot about it already. Baghdad U.S. Embassy, the U.S. Embassy in Baghdad.
Oh, yeah, that's a big sucker.
$1 billion.
Yeah.
Yeah. You can't see it from the moon, as I once said.
Did someone call you out on that?
Yeah. You can't even see the Great Wall of China. That turned out not to be true. But anyways, it's like $1 billion. So anyone who thinks United States, this is from Wired, Bagram Air Force Field, this is Spencer Ackerman's over there. Anyone who thinks the United States is really going to withdraw from Afghanistan in 2011 needs to come to this giant air base an hour away from Kabul. There's construction everywhere. It's 8 square miles. It's exactly what you wouldn't expect from a transient presence. They used to just have helicopters. And he says, today you've got C-17s, Predators, F-16s, F-15s, MC-12, passenger planes. He says, just everything under the sun is going on there. It's called Disney Drive. That's what goes around Bagram Air Force Base.
What?
There's a two-lane parking lot of Humvees, flamboyant cargo big rigs from Pakistan, known as jingle trucks, yellow DHL shipping vans, contractor vehicles, and mud-caked flatbeds. If the Navy could figure out a way to bring a combat ship to a landlocked country, it would be here. And it goes on and on and on. Then there are all the new facilities. West Disney has a fresh coat of cement, something that's easy to come by now that the Turkish firm, Yuxel, manufactures cement right inside Bagram's walls.
Wow.
Folks, this is where your money's going. This is where your money is going, right? And the reason that the home down the street from you, like on my block, or maybe yours, is being foreclosed is because there's no money for you. There's no money for the average person. They're not considered in all of this. And if they try to stop any of this madness, everybody in Congress said, oh, no, you know, you'll take jobs away from my district. Now, there are. That is true. The military-industrial complex actually creates jobs. I mean, certainly it gives away hundreds of billions of dollars, much of it unaccounted for in Iraq and now in Afghanistan. And it goes to firms like Dick Cheney's buddies and what have you, and these mercenary firms, mm-hmm. and like Blackwater and all that. But also, it just doesn't work well. I mean, when you're shoving money out the door to Boeing, they don't have a tremendous amount of employees. What we're talking about is an infrastructure in the United States that needs tremendous attention. And instead, it's $200 million for electrical generators in Kandahar. Now, these folks did okay without great electrification for a long, long time. And if they could figure out, rather than gasoline generators, hello.
Yeah, really.
Maybe what they ought to be doing is some alternative energy. They got a lot of sunshine in Afghanistan. But anyway, your thoughts on all of this. Oh, so who does it turn out, of course, that's getting the political hay? Here's Eugene Robinson. He says, and the center led by Barack Obama is just a non-starter. I mean, there's all sorts of decent things that have happened under his presidency, but not anything like that needs to happen. But Eugene Robinson writes in the Washington Times, not the Washington Times, Washington Post, the Republican Party's candidate for governor of Colorado believes that bicycle paths are, quote, part of a greater strategy to rein in American cities under a United Nations treaty.
What?
I mean, the inmates are now running the asylum.
Wow.
I mean, you have to be a nut to
come up with that one.
No, to be a Republican Party politician. And a lot of the people that are going along with their deal are nuts as well. The party's Senate candidate in Nevada wants to privatize Medicare and Social Security and has called for the United States to withdraw from the UN. No, not because of the bicycle conspiracy. The Republican candidate in Connecticut once climbed into a professional wrestling ring and kicked a man in the crotch.
Really?
She is actually head of the World Wrestling Federation. Major figures in the Republican Party are wasting valuable time and energy debating whether the 14th Amendment to the Constitution should be repealed. I mean, these people are out of their minds. But you know who's going along for the ride? Is the media. Now here, this is the lead story on Yahoo. Tea Party activists rally on Arizona-Mexico border. So the teabaggers headed out to the border to show support for Arizona's controversial new immigration law. This is the lead story. How many people do you think were there? 400. Mm-hmm. 400 people. I always use this example. When the left or women's rights, reproduction rights demonstrations come to Washington, there are more than 400 people in the lines at the port-a-johns.
Yeah, there are a million, usually.
Yeah, there's like a million people. And every time that I've gone to these, or Jolene has gone to these, or Jolene and I have gone to these things, and we come back and you say to people, did you hear that there was a march in Washington? There was a million people? And they go, huh, no. Lead
yeah,
story. 400 whack job teabaggers here are there with messages about curbing illegal immigration and chanting, USA, USA.
Maybe if we acted a little crazier.
Yeah, maybe that's it. One of the messages posted on the border wall read, Mr. President, secure this border for America. Well, you know, one of the ways you wouldn't even have to worry about people coming to the United States is if the United States hadn't screwed up the economy of Mexico so badly by passing NAFTA, which took down all these trade barriers and destroyed the simple economies of the Mexican farmers. And usually if you're a farmer, you're pretty ambitious. So a lot of them said, well, I've just been ruined. I cannot compete with this imported genetically modified corn that they're now bringing in to make tortillas from and all that. And I've just lost my property. I guess I'll go to the U.S. and support my family. We used to think that was a good idea when people came here from here. Well, they didn't. People had nasty things to say about the Irish and the mm-hmm. Italians and the Jews and the Greeks and everybody else that came here.
Yeah, and, so nothing's changed.
Nothing's changed. And it's the same people that are making the same awful, saying the same awful things about new people coming here. Yeah, but they were legal. Yeah, they were. Yay. 313-298-WRIF. That is our phone number. What do you think? You think I'm at a point of giving up?
No.
You know, I think things are going to happen. I think one of the things that's going to happen, you can be part of it, too. That is on
Saturday, isn't it?
Week from. Wait a minute. Is it this coming Saturday? 15, 14. I can't do the math. No.
What's the date?
What is the date today? Today is the 15th?
Yes.
The 15th, the 22nd, the 29th. That doesn't make sense.
Oh, it's in a week. It's in 2 weeks.
In 2 weeks. Yeah. Oh, it's going to it's going to be on August 28th.
Yeah, okay.
And you're wondering, what is going to be on August
28th? Yeah, spit it out.
This is a march initiated by Bob King, the new president of the UAW, for jobs, justice, and peace. Rebuilding America by enacting industrial and trade policies that will create jobs, encourage manufacturing in America, and put workers first. Well, that means this is class war, folks. But it means we're fighting back, finally, because the idea that jobs have been taken out of this country that have discouraged America, manufacturing in America and put workers last, that is what the ruling class has done. That's what's decimated the middle class in this country. That's what's at the heart of this economic recession. So now we're fighting back. I hope you're part of it. And this is on the anniversary of the Martin Luther King March that in Washington, D.C. in 1963, August 28, 1963. There was 125,000 people there. really cool if we could come somewhere near that amount. And there were probably people, I think I said this last week, there were probably people that at that time paid no attention to it. Well, also, let me say this, that in June, I think it was June 23rd, 1963, Martin Luther King and Walter Reuther, the president of the UAW at the time, they led a march down Washington, down Woodward Avenue for the same things, jobs, justice, and peace. And this was the kickoff for an historical period of grave importance and of great importance as well. And some people took part in it, and they were part of history. And this, when you hear them, black people and white people, that this is something that remains in their consciousness for all of their life. So on August 28th here in Detroit, another King, Bob King, and people like Reverend Jesse Jackson are going to be leading this march. And so you can go about your regular Saturday. You know, you've probably got lots of things to do and lots of things you'd like to do. Or you could start creating a critical mass here that's going to start tipping things, that we're going to start fighting back, that we are going to start redistributing the wealth that has been looted from us at in such a high percentage.
What time is the march?
Oh, yeah. The people are going to gather at 10:30 a.m. at the UAW Ford National Program Center. That's the old Veterans Memorial Building, right, almost right at the foot of Woodward. So it's 10, and it's all on my website, Peter Werbe, W-E-R-B-E.com. Also, enforce the law regarding workers' rights, civil rights, industrial regulation, and the creation of a fair and just educational, economic, and health policies. End the wars in Iraq and Afghanistan. Redirect the war budget to rebuilding America. No more $200 million for generators in Kandahar, no matter what General Petraeus wants. We want that money in Detroit and Pittsburgh and Sacramento and Birmingham, Alabama, and places like that. And also, end a moratorium on the practice that forces hardworking Americans from their homes while at the same time bailing out Wall Street executives and paying them million-dollar bonuses. There used to be a song from the labor movement in the 1930s called "Which Side Are You On?" Well, I don't think very many of you. There's a few of you really deluded people that are on the side of these rich guys. I mean, you know, you don't have any money. You don't have a pot to pee in, right? Yet you love these rich guys. It's sort of what people did in concentration camps. When met with unrelenting aggression, you identify with the aggressor.
Oh, my gosh.
But most people want to defend themselves, defend their families, their neighborhoods, and their communities. And those are people that are going to start fighting back. We haven't started to fight back. I don't know whether this is going to change history the way the Martin Luther King March in Detroit in 1963 did, but it might. And you could be part of it. Or you could just stay at home and listen on, the next day, and Jalene and I will say, oh, it was really great, you know. And if there's like 800 people there, I mean, I don't know what I'll do. Maybe I'll just,
throw your hands in the
air? Throw my hands in the air. If there's a few thousand. I mean, even that. I can't understand why there wouldn't be 200,000. Aren't there that many people either that are directly affected or have a conscience or are worried that this is going to affect them? And if you don't like the UAW, if you don't like the idea of marches, and what are you going to do? Are you just going to hope? Well, you can keep on hoping, and it ain't going to do a bit of good.
You're listening to Night Call with Peter Werbe and Jalene Jordan on 101 WRIF. Peter and Jalene are taking your calls at 313-298-WRIF.
That's what we do.
We'll be taking more of your calls right after this.
This is Matt Demmer from Jack Demmer Lincoln Mercury. I'm here to tell you that now it's more important than ever to buy an American-made vehicle. We at Jack Demmer Lincoln Mercury are still in the business of leasing and want to help you. Whether you're looking for the hot new Lincoln MKS, the sleek Lincoln MKZ, or the hottest crossover vehicle, the Lincoln MKX, Jack Demmer Lincoln Mercury in Dearborn is your one-stop shop. At our dealership, we believe in honesty, reliability, and support for our customers just like you. We encourage you to check out our virtual showroom on our website, Demmer.com. You can check out our vehicle inventory, and you can bet that if we don't have the vehicle you're in the market for, we'll do our very best to get it for you. While you're online, we invite you to get a no-obligation internet price quote. Whether you come into our newly renovated dealership or visit us online, we at Jack Demmer Lincoln Mercury invite you to experience the Demmer difference today. We're located on Michigan Avenue just east of Oakwood in Dearborn. Give us a call today, 313-274-8800. That's 313-274-8800. Or check us out on the web at Demmer.com.
It's out there.
powerful, endless, and fierce. It doesn't just know me. It is me. It's my signal. An all-knowing superstar that makes me the grand champion of texting.
Verizon makes it possible. You make it personal. And right now, for back to school, you can get exceptional devices under $20 after mail-in rebate debit card, like the out-of-this-world texting machines, the LG Cosmos and Samsung Reality. Or choose the HP Mini Netbook. Powerful, portable, and built to let your signal fly at just $19.99 after $100 mail-in rebate debit card.
I could go on and on, and I will.
It's not just back to school. It's forward to what's next. Send a strong signal at the Verizon Back to School Sale. Visit any Verizon store, verizonwireless.com, or call 1-800-256-4646.
Rule the air. Verizon.
Each requires new two-year activation. Netbook requires a mobile broadband plan. Early termination and other fees apply. Coverage details at verizonwireless.com.
Yes. Back with more Night Call on 101 WRIF. Voice your opinion at 313-298-WRIF. That's 313-298-9743. Here are Peter and Julie.
Wow, they have a medical marijuana magazine.
They do.
Hello.
They're having a big convention.
Yeah. Didn't they? They used to put people in jail for that, didn't they? They
yeah.
still probably still are a little. William writes into calltalkyes at yahoo.com. We allow the military and corporations to create the enemy leaders, then we bomb them, and then send them money to help out. He says, well, hell, let the people who made all the profits of this insanity pay for the mess that they made. You know, they never will, William, unless we force them to. And, let's see. Gun nuts at Art Beats and Eats. I'm a longtime visitor at Arts Beats and Eats Festival. Folks, if you're listening from somewhere other than Detroit, this is a terrific music festival. 3 days over Labor Day. It's usually been out in the suburb of Pontiac, and now it's going to be a little closer in at Royal Oak. This nice, peaceful little suburb. And Joe from Livonia says, now the gun nuts are pressuring the city to allow people to carry guns. Yeah.
Not good.
No. And apparently, according to the Oakland Press, the city of Royal Oak may not have any option. They're going to have to let this guy and his pals make everybody feel uncomfortable. You know, I got to tell you, I have, the police in our suburb are, you know, really on the ball, really decent.
Yep.
I've never heard of them, having complaints for brutality or anything like that. And with our block club, sometime they've been there. And you talk with them and just ordinary Joes and Janes, if they're police officers.
Mm-hmm.
And they're standing around with some 9mm pistol. I'm always sort of aware. It's not like I think that that he or she's going to suddenly whip it out
right.
And start firing at the crowd. But it's just, you know, it's peculiar accoutrement. I mean, I almost feel like saying, hey, you know, when you're coming to our block club meetings, could you leave your Gat in the car or something? I don't think you're going to need it here. I know. They have to carry it with them at all times and all that. And particularly when they're in uniform and what have you. But I don't want, what's this Joker's name? But I saw his name in here. The city of Royal Oak, there's tomorrow night, Monday, there's going to be another hearing. And the city attorney recommends a change in the legal opinion that he had drafted for the city commission, which will vote on the issue Monday night. He said, city attorney's David Gillum, he says he notes a number of people have questioned whether a prohibition on firearms at the festival is enforceable under Michigan law. Our office has conducted extensive research on the question, and based on that research, we would recommend that the festival agreement be amended to remove the prohibition on firearms, because the people that were running the Arts Beats and Eats, what part of their contract was, hey, how amazing that people can't come into it with firearms. Why in the world would anybody want to do that? I mean, they want to make a political point. Go make a political point somewhere else, pal, where you don't make everyone else nervous, and you're not the center of attention, and you don't look like big macho man. We ought to have that, the old
song.
Yeah, the old village people. Macho, macho, macho. Yeah.
Something like that.
Do you know I was going to go see them?
You were.
Up at Central, not at...
Casino?
Yeah, at the casino. So my wife said, after they sing YMCA and Macho Man, what else are you going to want to hear? And I went, that's a good point.
Yeah, there's the one song, In the Navy.
Yeah. 200,000 people are expected to visit the festival. And I know a couple of people, and there was, I can't think of her name, in the Detroit News said, essentially the city of Royal Oak, you can have your choice, either guns or us. You know, in other words, she's not going to come. Because, I mean, again, it's pretty peculiar that, because, well, I mean, what's it really about? I mean,
is there going to be some angry art?
Yeah, yeah.
Really? This guy. Ugh.
Yeah. It's called Michigan Open Carry. I mean, again, here we are facing environmental destruction, things like the Gulf, that increasingly that climate change is becoming more and more evident with these, you know, droughts in Russia, huge floods in Pakistan, these enormous storms in the United States, these economic problems that we have that don't look like they're going to be solved in the near future, and these guys want to carry guns. That's their big political issue. Hey, man, you got all this energy. Why don't you try to help everybody rather than being, you know, Mr. Big Guy with the... Man. let's see here. Let's take some calls. 313-298-WRIF. Here is James. James is in Rochester. Thanks for being our first caller on Night Call. Welcome to the show.
Hi, Peter. How are you doing tonight?
I'm doing good. So is Jolene.
I turned on your comment with military spending and stuff like that, and I don't remember the president's name, and it's not important who the person was, but he had the idea of not spending any less on military, just spend the money in the United States border. Bring all the men home, all your streets would be safer, those generators you talked about would be sent to a nation or to a city that had a hurricane or a large tornado.
Yeah, well, it was both two presidential candidates have called for dismantling of, depending on how you count, it's amazing that we don't even have an accurate count, but there's 700 to 900 military bases around the world, and the Republican candidate Ron Paul and the Democratic candidate Dennis Kucinich have both called for that. And if this, if elections were not governed by corporate money, those would have been the two men running for the presidency, because they really represent, I would say, the two dominant sentiments in this country. John McCain certainly didn't. And although Barack Obama was able, through a rhetoric and an attractive personality, give us what he called hope, certainly in his, even what he advocated before, because it was never really clear, and certainly since, has never really provided anything like a real alternative. Ron Paul would, and contained some of the, you know, the social conservative things that I would never occur to me to vote for him. And Dennis Kucinich, the same things about, as you said, James, about, you know, ending this military-industrial complex that the Republican Dwight Eisenhower, the president, warned about, and using all that money here in a way that makes sense. I mean, they're talking about a $700 billion military budget, which, when everything else is really counted, it's like $1 trillion a year. You could cut that by two-thirds to begin with. And we could begin to start to make peace around the world rather than making war, as we do all the time. All right, thank you for that. I appreciate it. Here is John in Trenton. John, hi. It's Peter and Jolene. You're on the air.
Oh, hi. I was listening about the your comment about the Mexican farmers, how they suffered.
Yeah.
NAFTA, I think NAFTA's been a bad thing for us.
Us too, yeah.
Yeah. And yes, the Mexican farmers have taken a hit, but the rest of the Mexican economy, I mean, they've seen increases of over 51% of growth in their economy.
But so maybe, man,
NAFTA overall.
You don't remember the Mexican crash? I don't think they've ever recovered from that. And wages are abysmally low. That's why American corporations take their business there, because they don't want to pay decent middle class wages to citizens of this country. The country is rift with 22,000 people have been killed in drug wars. Hundreds of women are killed in border towns every year, which they don't even know why, and are just always finding mass graves. I mean, the country is a 100% total mess, I'd say. Okay, well, I guess you're considering what I said. I appreciate that. Thank you very much. Here's Zach in Livonia. Zach, how you doing?
I'm all right.
Go ahead, you're on the air.
All right, well, I was listening to what you were talking about considering or the open carry at the Arts, Beats, and Eats Festival.
Yeah.
Now, I'm kind of, my opinion differs.
Go ahead. Tell me why.
Okay. Well, first off, I don't understand why people care about law-abiding citizens carrying their guns openly.
Do you know what guns are? I mean, are you a gun owner? I am.
I am.
Okay. You know what the I mean, there's a couple purposes for guns. I mean, one, you can have hunting, skill shooting, you know, stuff like that. But mostly people have them for home and personal defense. I mean, they're weapons that are designed to kill people. So why in the world at a peaceful, joyous gathering of music and art and families would someone want to introduce a object of that nature into something like when there's absolutely no need for it whatsoever?
Okay.
Yeah?
Have you ever been mugged?
You know, I'll tell you, my friend, I was born and raised in Detroit. I have been mugged. I have fought people. I have pulled guns on people to defend my house. I've done more probably than you ever have. And I still, you know, travel in the city of Detroit. I was just down at a festival around Mount Elliott and Mack in a neighborhood that probably 90% of this audience would be scared. Ooh, don't say that. The poopless to go into. And you know how many guns I brought with me? Zero, because I didn't need them. And I sure don't need them in Royal Oak. And anybody that wants them there, it's about them. It's about them showing how manly they are and how powerful they are. And they don't give a damn how uncomfortable they make other people. I mean, if you're walking out of a bar because you're an owner at 3:30 in the morning and you've got $1,500 in your pocket or something like that, it would sure make a lot of sense to have a concealed weapon. And there's times and places for everything. And anyone who's a responsible gun owner knows that there's a time and a place where guns come into play. Arts, Beats, and Eats ain't one. In fact, that's probably number 490. So then it just turns out to be all about them. Let's see. It's Brad in Lake Orion. Hi, you're on the air. Hey, Brad.
How you doing?
I'm doing good. Real good, actually.
Barely hear you, but I guess I was calling about the guns at Arts, Beats, and Eats.
Yeah.
Now, I've listened to you. It's the first time I've ever called. Usually, and I don't have a CCW. I used to. I got tired of carrying because it was a pain.
Yeah, and you don't need them.
Well, but see, what I see in you, you usually stick up for people's rights, and it is a person's rights by the law.
Well,
now, I don't know.
Yeah, it is.
At Arts, Beats, and Eats, are they talking about open carry or concealed carry?
Open.
Because then the police could just get them on disturbing the peace.
No, they can't. I mean, it looks like they're law-abiding. You know what this, actually, I just thought of this, Brad. Tell me what you think of it, and I'm sorry you can't hear me better. I don't know why you can't. It's probably just a glitch in our technology. This thing about the mosque. Being put in the a few blocks away from the World Trade Center. The mayor of New York and the president has said, you know, given property rights and what have you, and the law and the fact that they own this place, they have every right in the world to put this mosque right there because that's their property. And people are saying though, you know, this is extraordinarily insensitive, and I mean that's a whole other argument. But I'll tell you who's really on top of all this stuff about the Mostov, again, is the right wing trying to, you know, split people apart and trying to take political advantage of, mm-hmm. of a national tragedy and what have you. But in some ways, you can't have it both ways. I would think that that the vast majority of people that would go to a festival, bring their kids there, all of a sudden they see guys with loaded guns on their hips. That's gonna be upset. upsetting. I mean, and you know what? I don't know anybody that's there. I don't know what kind of training they had. I know that a police officer walking through that crowd with a gun on his or her hip has had a lot of training and is committed. How do I know what kind of nutbag is deciding that? Because that's weird behavior. People do not want to walk around in this society with guns strapped to their waist unless they're, like I said, either trying to make some personal point or some political point, and they ought to make some political point where other people don't have to suffer for it. All right. Thank you. Appreciate it. Here's Jonathan in Romulus. Jonathan, hi. You're on the air.
Hey, what's up? I like to put the input on the gun carrying the concealed weapons and stuff.
We're not talking about concealed here.
Oh, not concealed. Well, anyway, I agree on both situations. If you were to carry a weapon, like you said earlier, to, you know, the right time to carry it, like, say, you're coming out of the bar, like you said earlier. But going to a festival or a live public event, I believe you shouldn't carry something like that. The only guns you should be carrying is what's actually connected to your torso.
Connected to your torso? I mean, concealed?
Yeah, like, you should. If you're at a festival, if something's going down, you might as well just fight, you know. Duke it out or something.
Yeah, well, that doesn't happen at Arts, Beats, and Eats. You know, this is
pretty tame.
Yeah, it's real tame. Jolene and I have broadcasts from there anytime. And it's really a community festival. It's really about fun. It's really about connecting with people in a community around the creativity of other people in the community. And, all of a sudden, having this weapon of death, and that's what they are, it just is not in keeping with it all and absolutely unnecessary. It's, it'd be like, somebody having a wedding and people show up with picket signs or something like that. It's just inappropriate. All right. Thanks a lot. Appreciate it. Let's see here. Okay. Let's take this here. Here's Bill and Wayne. Hey, Bill, you're on the air. Welcome. Bill, are you with me? Bill, we'll put you on hold and see if you can figure this one out. Let's see. It's next caller is Craig in Taylor. Hey, Craig, you're on the air.
Hey, Craig. How you doing?
We're good. We're good.
All right. I'm calling in for some good enlightenment. I mean, it's been riding on my mind ever since I heard about the mosque in New York. It's been riding on my mind. I could really use some political enlightenment because I kind of feel offended that they're putting the mosque there, or it's been voted on or whatnot.
Well, you know, just like the city of Royal Oak apparently cannot prohibit people from carrying openly carrying guns to even a public festival like this, no matter how odious it seems, probably, I'm sure, to the majority of people there. The same way is what the mayor of New York said, what the building commission said, that they own the property. There are actually people that are involved in trying to create and have for the last 10 years create dialogue between Christian Jews and Muslims. And they're people are always saying, you know, we got to get the mainstream Muslims to get these radicals under control.
Which is 99% of the Muslims.
Yeah, the mainstream.
Yes.
Right. Yes.
Thank you.
Yeah. And and also, there'd be a lot less radical Muslims if we weren't financing Israel and Lebanon and Saudi Arabia and Afghanistan and Pakistan and all that. That guarantees that we're going to have people pissed off at us for almost ever. So I don't know.
It's not even on the site. It's two blocks away.
Yeah.
Like you said, Peter, they own it. And aren't there mosques all over the country?
Yeah. I was in the city. Why shouldn't there be one in
New York City?
I was in the city recently that is the largest percentage of Muslims in the country, city with the largest percentage, which is?
Dearborn.
Nope.
Oh.
Hamtramck.
Oh. Oh, okay.
Yeah. And I would say probably.
Yeah, because they have prayer and.
Yeah. Like and I went to some great, that's a long story. Again, there's people doing intercommunal stuff, so that bringing together the different peoples that are there and the different immigrants. Most of them are South Asian and even a lot of Bosnians who are Muslims as well from, the former Yugoslavia. Okay, did that do any enlightening? I hope so. 313-298-WRIF, that is our phone number. And sorry, I don't mean to, sometimes I have to look around. Why I'm going doom doom like that? I'm looking around as to which button to press next, and I don't know why I'm having difficulty doing it. Here is Ray in Dearborn. Ray, thanks for calling us. Peter and Jolene here with you on WRIF. Welcome. You're on the air.
Yes. Hi. How are you doing?
We're good.
I was calling because is that Pakistan that got flooded that we're helping them because we want them to like us?
I guess, but I mean, hopefully that's the kind of thing that we could do because of our size, because of our military and what have you, help people in dire need. So
yeah, I understand that, but how about taking care of your own people? I mean, when New Orleans flooded, they didn't jump on a case like that.
No, they didn't.
No.
They didn't. Bush.
That was a major failure.
Yeah, that was.
That was. I'm just saying, we gotta jump in and help somebody just to make them like. Because, there shouldn't be that way. I mean, help your own people. Come on.
Absolutely. We're in agreement on that. And that doesn't mean we couldn't help people. I mean, at times, if we're such a wealthy country. But it's kind of strange. It would be like if you had lost your job and your house was in danger of being foreclosed, and suddenly you did two things. One, you got real generous and took like $1,000 out of the rest of the money you had and helped somebody else down the block when you weren't even meeting your own bills, and then also took another $1,000 and bought a bunch of handguns for people, down the block. So that's kind of like that's like. But I agree with you, Ray. Indeed, I do. 313-298-WRIF. And here's our next caller. It is David from Lake Orion. Hi, David. You're on the air.
Hi. I originally wanted to call in and comment just on the open carry thing, but then you mentioned the New York City mosque thing.
Yeah.
And I was reading an article about Bloomberg arguing that not allowing the mosque to be built would be a violation of their First Amendment rights.
Right. It would be.
Okay. And then I was thinking, well, what about zoning? That's reasonable laws, things like that. But then I thought, wait a minute. Mayor Bloomberg is very much anti-gun, but yet he also said in front of Congress, like last year, that he does support the First or the Second Amendment, but he believes in reasonable gun laws, which basically, if you look at the mayor's against illegal guns on his website, he basically advocates the complete ban of of handguns, which the D.C. versus Heller case ruled that it's unreasonable to ban a whole class of guns that most Americans favor for personal defense, especially in
the talk about the elimination of handguns in this society is crazy. Nobody's going to be able to do that. I mean, everybody has a right to their opinion. I mean, abortion is legal in this country, upheld by the Supreme Court in the same manner that increasingly private gun ownership has been affirmed by in possession by the Supreme Court, and one has the right to oppose it. I mean, Michael Bloomberg presides over a city as mayor that sees all sorts of crimes that are committed by people carrying illegal guns, and they're bought in other states by the bushel full, and then come to New York, and one can understand. I mean, he has the right to advocate that; other people have the right to oppose it. Don't you think?
I believe so. I agree with you. I'm a libertarian. I'm pro gay rights. I'm pro gun rights. I'm basically, my view is that freedom is a very valuable thing, and then to have the government come in and micromanage your life, that's not freedom. You know, all in the name of so-called safety and security that doesn't really exist.
Well, I guess I think that the role of government, if it hadn't been for the role of government in our affairs, we'd all still be probably working, 12, 14 hours a day, there would be no minimum wage. And I know that a lot of libertarians don't think there should be a minimum wage, don't think there should be Social Security and what have you. But I think life would be nasty, brutish, and short the way it was in the 19th century when we were left to the tender mercies of the capitalists, right? Or no, right?
Well,
not right.
No, there's a balance there, I think.
Okay. All right, that's good enough. I got to, speaking of capitalism, I've got to do a few things. Appreciate it. Thank you very much. We'll be right back.
You're listening to Night Call with Peter Werby and Jolene Jordan on 101 WRIF. Let your opinion be heard. Call us at 313-298-WRIF.
Whatever's going on, it seems to be far from over.
Peter and Jolene will be taking more of your calls right after this.
Did you know the tap water in your home may be hazardous? Not to your health, but to your appliances and your wallet. Your home's hard water creates pipe-clogging lime scale, and that can shorten the life of your water heater, ruin your dishwasher, and break down your washing machine. Lime scale deposits block the heating element, and that could be costing you an extra $1,200 a year in energy and wear. But you can remove lime scale without chemicals, magnets, or salts. It's easy with HydraCare, the patent device used worldwide. See for yourself at bestsoftwater.com. You simply clip HydraCare to your main water pipe. HydraCare removes and prevents lime scale buildup in your entire plumbing system. If your home has hard water, extend the life of your appliances with HydraCare. Try it risk-free. Just go to bestsoftwater.com. That's bestsoftwater.com. Or call now, 888-883-8187. That's 888-883-8187.
S-O-1 WRIF and WRIF HD1 Detroit. This is Night Call on 101 WRIF. Voice your opinion at 313-298-WRIF. That's 313-298-9743. Now, here are Peter Werby and Julene Jordan.
All right, eat the rich. They're eating us. We got to start fighting back. One of the ways we can do it is Saturday, August 28th. There will be a march led by the United Auto Workers. Bob King, new president. In fact, I'm going to interview him this week, and we'll talk to him. I might even Yeah, I might even run it, the interview first. You know, like right at 11 o'clock.
Okay.
Here's the deal. There's a march for jobs, justice, and peace. It commemorates Martin Luther King's 1963 visit to Detroit, and it's talking about rebuilding America, enforcing law regarding workers' rights, ending the wars in Iraq and Afghanistan, enact a moratorium on foreclosures. So you can be part of that. You can be part of history. If you want some information about it, and I hope you do, you just go to my website, Peter Werby. That's WERBE.com. Oh, yeah. So why are we playing Eat the Rich? So you just got fired. You or somebody down the block had foreclosure. Your pension just went away. But a wind tunnel, a concierge. Is that how you say that?
Concierge.
That's right. Concierge. I don't understand that language.
The person who gets you things.
Yeah. A store that's shaped like an eyeball. It doesn't sound like an eyeglasses retailer, but then it's not supposed to. Trying to pull itself out of the recession, Luxottica, the $6.6 billion eyewear company with retail outlets like Sunglass Hut and LensCrafters, is experimenting with a concept store that draws a little bit from Apple, a lot from Disneyland. And let's see, where the hell is it? It doesn't even say. But, you know, $6.6 billion in eyewear. You know, I went to get some sunglasses, finally. I never used to really like wearing them. And I looked at this pair in Macy's, and I thought, wow, $35, man, for just that.
That's not bad.
No, it was $350.
Oh,
I said, "What? I said, well, what is in this that makes it $350?"
A name brand.
Yeah, it had some famous name, but so I just went to
the dollar store?
No, it's one. What's the big store at the Somerset Mall? Well, you know, I don't know. You don't even go out there, do you?
I don't care for it.
Anyway, they have an outlet. There. They have an outlet. So I got a pair for like $14.
Good job.
And they're great. But anyway, there must be. I don't ever get that. Like, so so when people look at me, do they know I'm wearing $14 sunglasses?
No.
When someone's wearing a $350 pair of sunglasses, does anybody know that? Probably the other people who wear those do.
Under $10 and...
$10?
Yeah,
I got screwed.
They're like a knockoff of Gucci's, and they're called Coogies.
I'm telling you, knockoffs is the way to go. Yeah.
Telling
you. And we talked about that. Every time I go to New York, I get a pashmina scarf.
Oh, yeah.
For my wife. $5.
Yeah.
Rather than what would they be? Like 50 or 70.
Right.
Yeah. And I don't know what the hell it's made of, but they last. And it doesn't matter. Really? You know, if they get dirty, you wouldn't want to wash these babies or have them cleaned. You know, you can wear them. I mean, your scarves don't get dirty, right?
No.
Yeah. So I think she has every one I ever bought her.
Really?
Yeah.
Well, get me one next time.
I will.
Okay.
I will. All right, here's Bill and Wayne. Bill, let's try it again. Hi, you're on the air.
Hey, how you doing?
We're doing good.
Hey, Peter, I got a few questions and comments.
Sure, please. That's what we're here for.
I was in Desert Storm.
Okay.
During, right at the end of Desert Shield to the beginning of Desert Storm. I got out of the Navy in 91. And I was hearing what was going on. And one of my questions is, okay, with Katrina, if we're over there and we're trying to help Iraq out with all this other stuff, when we got hit with Katrina, how come we don't have countries coming and helping us?
Well, there's one country at a minimum. I mean, for one thing, it's pretty weird that we did not immediately, I shouldn't say we, George Bush didn't immediately allocate resources protect that town to begin with. Everyone knew that those levees would not hold a force. What was it? 4, 5, 6, whatever it was. That it wouldn't hold that. They were just hoping it would never get that big, and it did. Cuba offered to help, and
that's right.
And Bush said, "No, thank you." All right, Thank you very much, Bill. I appreciate your call. Let's see. Here is JJ. He's in Dundee. Go ahead, JJ. You're on the air.
Yes, sir. You know, they talked about a lot of good things tonight, and I think the most important thing that you brought up was you called it the looting of the American people and the American worker.
Sure.
I consider it more like rape by the Republicans and the wealthy corporations and big business and the wealthy. But I'm saddened to see that America has let it get like this. It's the American people that need to get together again and to have that American pride and patriotism that we used to have back
sure.
during World War I, World War II.
Not this teabagger stuff.
Yeah. I mean, because they've gotten away with this because essentially we've let them. I mean, that 1%, the people that run the companies, the corporations, they always wanted us to, like I said earlier, work 12, 14 hours a day, put 8-year-old kids in factories, have no safety, no safeguards for health or safety or anything like that, no weekends, no Social Security, no minimum wage, and their pals, the Republicans, always tried to stop that politically, and it took us, the people, to finally say, hey, we're mad as hell and we're not going to take it anymore. And then, you know, they brought out the cops, they brought out the National Guard, they brought out the Pinkerton detectives, they brought out the thugs and the goons to shoot our grandfathers and great-grandfathers down in the streets because we had the temerity to want it like an 8-hour day or our union recognized. So we've always had to fight back. I don't think that we'll come to this anymore. In fact, I think if we stood up and said, you've got to stop this looting, or let me put it another way, we will not tolerate this looting any longer. And a mass movement arose that put this into practice on all sorts of different political and social levels. They'd say, okay, all right, okay, let's not get angry about this because they've got so much money. You know, they don't need any more money. It's just pathological greed to take more and more money from us. It's insane. Richie Rich Kid has every single thing that he wants. Last week, remember I quoted Warren Buffett, who said, I forgot how many billions he has, 35, 45 billion. He said if he lost 99% of his money, it wouldn't change his lifestyle a bit.
Amazing.
You and I, why do we want more money? We say, oh, we'll get a cool car. We'll get some cool clothes. We'll get stuff like that. Get a boat. You know, get a cottage
pay
up north. Pay the bills. Yeah. In other words, we would use it for creature comforts and probably number. But I would be showboating because kind of car you get, clothes you wear, watch you get, and all that. But those are trinkets. So, guys like Warren Buffett, they have that plus 99%. So they have 99%. What he's saying is 99% of the wealth that he has isn't necessary for him to live like one of the richest men on the planet. So the government should confiscate it. I love that. Just confiscate it, you know. Spread it out in California and Detroit and Michigan, you know. Get rid of all the debt that we have. And you would think a guy like Buffett would say, so, I mean, if you got left with, I don't even know what that would mean. Say you got left with $45 million.
Mm-hmm.
Say, those communists, they took away my $45 billion and all I got is $45 million. Or would only be, I can't even do the math, 5 million, whatever. Oh, those people are horrible. You know, I had $45 billion. Now I've got $45
million.
Wow, wow, wow. Eat the rich. God, they're eating us. ETR. All right. Okay, let's, I'm doing this in order now. Usually what we do it by topic and subject, but now I'm just going who's been on
longer.
Longest,
okay.
That's why, so it's taking me a bit. Here's Olivia in Bellevue. Hey, Olivia, you're on the air. Welcome.
Click on that.
Oh, I got to click on it. Sorry. Hey, Olivia, just 1 minute. I forgot. Usually what I do is I tell people at this point that you can go to my website, Peter Werbe, WERBE.com. Oh, look at that. It says, I wonder who put that up there. Huge letters. It says, eat the rich.
Let me guess.
Yeah.
You.
Buffett, Gates, Rockefeller, and the conscience of the very, very rich.
I read that article, by the way. Amazing. I highly recommend people go to your website and read that.
But there's also the information about the UAW and Rainbow Coalition March in Detroit on, that's nice. I got with Detroit March in Detroit. Why don't people help me? All you got
to
do.
I need to look at your site more often.
Is right. Let me see. Let me make sure I'm remembering. Jerry. Yeah. Jerry, who's been very helpful in a number of things having to do with my website, including correcting some of the language that's on there that was wrong. But come on, man. Read through it. Tell me what's messed up. That's messed up. Anyway, all the information about the march in Detroit to rebuild America, jobs, justice, and peace, but also tonight's guests, who are Barbara Ehrenreich, the author of Brightsided, How Positive Thinking is Undermining America.
Whoa.
Aren't you supposed to be positive?
Yeah. I love her. She's wonderful.
Yeah,
she is.
She wrote Nickel
and Dimed. Yeah, where she went around and worked as a waitress around the country and tried to make it.
Yeah, a great book. But she said in the interview, she said, boy, if it wasn't for my book called Dancing in the Streets, History of Dancing.
Yeah.
That she said I'd come across as a complete grump.
We need her.
Yeah.
William wrote in, Peter, and said about the right to carry law, what about the rights of the majority of people who want to attend a peaceful gathering? Such freaks who find it mentally acceptable to carry a gun anywhere just because they can. What the hell ever happened to common sense?
There you go. Matthew Stein will be our second guest on Night Call. When Technology Fails, a Manual for Self-Reliance, Sustainability, and Surviving the Long, Long Emergency. So this should be attractive to people who think that everything's going to collapse, you know, some leftists do and some rightists do.
So
you can check that out. It's very interesting.
Will it calm them down?
No, but it's he talks about how do you drink dirty water, you know, how do you eat bugs. Yeah.
Yeah.
He said,
just open your mouth and chew, right?
Yeah. Well, he said that's the first question everyone always asks him.
Really?
Yeah. What about this eating bugs stuff, man?
What about the water? Well, I'll find out.
Yeah, yeah. Steve writes in to calltalkyes@yahoo.com. Hello, Peter. Experience demands that man is the only animal which devours his own kind, for I can apply no milder term to the general prey of the rich on the poor. Mm. What commie said that?
I don't know.
Thomas Jefferson. Thank you, Steve. All right, let's go back to our phones. 313-298-WRIF. And here's Olivia in Belleville. Hi, Olivia. You're on the air.
Hi, how are you guys?
We're good.
Great, thank you.
I shouldn't speak for both of us.
Yeah, we are.
Yeah.
Good. I hate to beat a dead horse, but I was wondering if I could comment on the arts beats and eat.
Sure.
You know, no, I think that they make laws for a reason in places such as hospitals and churches, and people seem to be okay with that. I'm not too familiar with gun laws myself. I do think there are gun crazies out there, and, you know, all politics aside, because my fiancé is ex-military, and we kick the idea around all the time of him getting a gun, and I'm all for it in places that need to have it, but, you know, at peaceful events and stuff like that, I think, you know, you hit the nail on the head when you said that it's all political, and it's all about, you know, I have a gun, hear me roar kind of a thing, and I think it's absolutely inappropriate at certain places.
Now, I agree. But, you know, there's another thing. People always say they have it for safety. And, doesn't this make sense? Houses in which there are guns have a much higher rate of murders and suicides. Well, gee, how strange is that?
Right. So, exactly.
Go ahead.
I'm sorry. I was going to say it's unmotivating to get a gun, too, because I feel like I'm going to, you know, I'll be classified as a crazy. But I think, it's appropriate in certain places, and the people who are for any kind of peaceful gathering and they have a gun on their hip and there's little kids staring at that. I'm even still iffy on bar situations. I thought that Michigan doesn't allow you to have guns in bars. To me, a gun with alcohol is probably the worst thing that you could possibly, you know, mix.
Do you think?
So how about bad idea.
Yeah, right. I mean, whew.
Bad idea. So, I just wanted to put it out there because I listen to you a lot, and so does my fiance, and we hear a lot of, the right side and the Republican side, and I'm trying not to be political because I know that there are gun crazies on left and right, but there's a time and a place, and I think that, we should try and maintain some kind of an appropriate behavior with them.
Well, I agree, but Olivia, I got to say, there are no gun crazies on the left. I mean, there were maybe during the 60s or something like that. You know, they were always talking about armed struggle and Mao Zedong and all that. But that's long gone. No, I mean, this right to carry is a complete right-wing Republican thing, without a doubt. All right, thank you very much. As I said that, I probably am going to be contradicted by somebody calling in at 313-298-WRIF. But in the main, you always do well with that. In the main, it's that. Here's Kevin in Milford, a lovely town. Hi, Kevin, you're on the air.
Hi, Peter. I'd like to get straight to the subject. I'm not really sure about this fact, but I heard that a lot of times that when mosques are put up, it is because of a victory or a religious victory in the area.
Well, that is exactly what the Christians have done all over the world as well. So it's not.
Where did you hear this?
Well, no, this is a right wing talking point.
Wow.
This is all over the right wing media and blogs and what have you. You know, if people would do a little I am completely non-religious, and that is in a sense almost an understatement. So I'm never real pleased to tell you the truth when any religious establishment gets set up, but if these are folks that are ordinary Americans that want to build a religious center on property that they own in New York City, they actually happen to be the kind of people that are good community members that have done everything possible to create roots in their adopted society. Many, a lot of these people have been here for a long, long time. And I guess... At one level, I can understand why people, because Islam has been associated so directly, they turned out to be the people that are resisting our invasion and occupation of Iraq. They're the people that are opposing our invasion and occupation of Afghanistan. And they're also the people that, of a religion that did us great harm on September 11th, the anniversary, of course, coming up. However, As I said last week, if somebody wanted to build a church around the site of, I don't even know if it's still functioning as the federal building in Oklahoma City, and a Christian church, no one would say, wait a minute, Timothy McVeigh was this far right wing Christian, that it's an insult to have a Christian church near the Oklahoma federal building. People would think they were crazy, but somehow because it's Muslim and they're the outsiders, they're new to the country.
The target right now lot of people.
Yeah, but you have to stay a little bit in perspective about that. I mean, you can compare apples to oranges, but the truth is, at that spot, you know, in New York City, that had gone on, and you must, you know, establish some decorum, which I believe also, you know, coincides along with this the gun thing that's going down in Royal Oak. I think it should be the responsibility of the NRA to say, you know what, like you said, this isn't the time or place, you know, to push our views onto the public.
Sure.
I am a, you know, a staunch believer in the right to bear arms, but it really, you know, like you said, it isn't the time or place. One more point, sir.
Wait, let me just interrupt you to, in a sense, agree with, I mean, even though it is, I mean, I agree with what Barack Obama said in a way, that he said that there is no way that this can be denied. I mean, Congress shall make no law establishing religion or forbidding it or something like that. That's what the people say. It's the First Amendment. Also, it's a whole thing of property rights, their property. They can do what they want. This hasn't worked out well for them. I mean, they unknowingly kicked a hornet's nest, and this is nothing like they expected, and it's kind of, you know, and people that lived in New York, that lost people, it's pretty easy for them to say it was people of the Muslim faith that did this heinous act. These are Muslims. To put this near there is, you know, like an insult or what have you. But it's nothing to do with victory sites or anything. Like these are good people that want to do it.
Okay. And also one point I'd like to make, even though, you know, I have some differences with what, you know, your points of view and my points of view, and pretty much the same. I just don't understand why this government cannot get some kind of relationships, you know, even, you know, with the differences of opinions, and also with the people that are, you know, being trodden down in this country, that are, you know, like you said, we have this thing going, and 800 people showed up. I just can't believe this. What is it going to take for people of our country that, like me, the middle class is being kind of pushed down right now, to, you know, come up and decide enough is enough?
You know what happens, though, and I think here's what's happening, Kevin. I think, and I used this phrase earlier, that a critical mass is being created. We don't have a political party in this country that can really take the needs of the American people at this time and act on it. I mean, Democratic Party is better than a stick in the eye, but that's not what we need. We need something that does some fundamental renewal of this country and set it back on its feet. Democratic Party is not, it's too institutionalized to do that. And the Republicans, I mean, that's like a terrible joke. I almost want the Congress to be taken over by these whack jobs that they have running and see what happens. I mean, I wish there was some way that suddenly Sarah Palin could become president.
Oh, my.
Right now. And all the Republicans, I mean, it would probably start a revolution in about 6 weeks.
Yeah, I should say so.
All right, Kevin. Thank you very much. Appreciate it. Let's see here. Here is Brandon in Detroit. Hi, Brandon. You're on the air.
Hello, Peter. How you doing?
We're good.
You've touched across a couple of topics while I've been sitting here on hold, too, that I'd like to comment on. But, like, with the whole gun thing, which was my original call.
Sure.
It's funny. I was watching War, Inc. on TV, and I need to go get a pack of cigarettes. So I'm driving, listening to you on the radio, and here comes this topic. I agree totally with there's a time and a place for it. You know, they don't let people just walk in banks with guns. They don't, and as far as the guy who commented about bars, it's correct. You're not supposed to be consuming alcohol while you're carrying a concealed firearm.
That's good.
Yeah, you know, real good.
That's a jailable offense, and you'll lose your, you know, license to carry. I agree with that totally. And as far as the rest of this whole governmental issue goes, it's really strange. Everybody gets stuck on religion, and that's what causes a lot of the problems. When, if you go back through history and you look right after the Revolutionary War, when this country was first formed, there was a lot of books written. There was a lot of things tossed around idea-wise, and there was a lot of talk about the plurality of worlds, and it really challenged the Christian faith. And Thomas Paine was actually unofficially excommunicated and arrested in France for writing in a book basically stating that people who were Christians were crazy because the sun is a star and there's billions of other stars. You know, I mean, how could we be the only ones, you know? And it just goes to show you that our founding fathers wanted nothing to do with identifying our nation with a religion. You know, people just get so stuck on that. And
no, they sure didn't.
A lot of that being in the public spotlight is where the problem comes from. You know, I mean, if you just let people live their life and all this media coverage and, you know, how satellites are now, I mean, you can get online and see what's going on in, you know, Iraq or Iran right now on a camera.
Well, my favorite quote, I've also been quoting this every week as well, what Mark Twain said, if you don't read the newspapers, because they didn't have anything else back then, if you don't read the newspapers, you're uninformed. If you do read them, you're misinformed. I mean, the nonsense that comes across the media is, you know, incredible. All right. Thank you very much. I appreciate it. Let's go out of state to Terrence in Ocala, Florida. Go ahead. You're on the air, Terrence.
Hey, good morning, Pete, and Repeat. It's nice to talk to you again.
I'm Repeat.
Oh.
I love it. That's a new one.
My favorite, commie Nazis. I got to tell you.
We're commie Nazis.
Communists.
I think you gotta listen. If you're getting a script from Rush Limbaugh, you gotta at least pronounce it right.
Huh? Mark Scott.
Oh my God! Talk about whack jobs.
I think I was there on CNN go. With that guy or MSNBC.
No. He passed away.
Oh, okay.
Certifiable insane man.
There's proof. Pete and Repeat. What about that Nazi? She wasn't even. She was out of town at the time, I guess. But that's okay.
You're getting dangerously close to going away. Go ahead.
That's okay. I was calling. I had to pick a subject, so I was going to pick the subject of the Royal Oak and you talking about the gun rights people pushing their views at a particular time and place. Like this is not the time or place to do it.
Yeah.
When actually it was the county commissioner that pushed his views. And the gun rights people reacted because Michigan is a right to carry state, and it was the county commissioner that pushed his views onto Royal Oak and forced the outing, I guess you could say, of the gun rights.
Well, actually, there was a city had a contract with the Arts, Beats, and Eats that called for a ban on firearms when they put it together, and it looks like, in fact, it appears, given the Michigan law, that the city attorney of Royal Oak recommended that they change that he change his opinion, and that they should that under the Michigan law that that a prohibition on firearms at the festival is not enforceable under Michigan law. So yeah, I mean, I think it's an insane law that would allow people to come into a crowded area with guns. I mean, you know, it's given how many guns are here in this country and how many absolutely crazy people have them, it's a wonder that there's not more mass murders and suicides and what have you. Mm-hmm. I mean, I really think, you know, our friend Greg Palast's book, Armed Madhouse, is really a good description. But given that there's so many guns and so many in the hands of so many people, probably, you know, there's a low incidence. But still, I mean, we're talking tens of thousands of people, hundreds of thousands of people that get shot and everything, what have you. So just like the more guns you have in the hands of more people, the more incidents you're going to have. I mean, that's common sense. Like the more miles that you drive, the more chance you have of an accident. So, do we really need guns? Well, yeah. I mean, you say, yeah, we got it, because people go into schools, go into businesses, go in, you know, and start shooting. shooting, go to churches and shoot people. So
there was a restaurant one last week in New York.
Yeah, well, yeah, it's the mass murder. Mm-hmm. I mean, no other country. I mean, there's something fundamentally wrong when there so many people feel the need to have to carry weapons. And this is, we're not talking about weaponry as a guard against tyrannical governments, because that the capacity of a citizen, even a citizen's militia, to resist the armed force of a country is ridiculous. You know, you got, okay, we've got 10,000 guys with our concealed weapons and our the ones on our hips, and they just bring, you know, send some F-14s over. All right, so whatever. All right, Terrence, have a good one. 313-298-WRIF.
Heat and repeat.
Yeah.
That's funny.
But we used to say when we were a kid, maybe it was Pete and Repeat were walking across a bridge and Pete fell off. Who's left?
Repeat?
Pete and Repeat were walking across a bridge and Pete fell off. Who's left?
Gotcha.
Yeah, okay. That's a kid thing. Here's Rudy. Rudy's in Macomb. Hey, Rudy, you're on the air. Welcome.
Thanks for taking my call.
Yeah.
Something has really enraged me, and I think a lot of people have been enraged by this, too. The bankers and the mortgage people who have caused most of the economic calamity, not only on the United States but on the world, continue to get bonuses.
Sure.
Continue to... Merrill Lynch, as a matter of fact, got $5 billion of bonuses with their merger with Bank of America. Countrywide also was allowed to go with Bank of America. I boycott Bank of America. I don't allow crooks to have my money.
Well, you know what's the unfortunate thing, Rudy? You might even take it to a local credit union, and you know what they do with their money? They give it to the Bank of America. I mean, it's a huge racket that is hard to individual. I mean, I'm not being, you know, critical of your sensibility here or your determination. And sometimes all we can do as individuals are small symbolic acts, right?
And Goldman Sachs paid a penalty peanut compared to what they stole.
Oh, yeah, it's ridiculous.
We're getting into a situation now where the public has to boycott or do something to get people aware that these criminals are taking people's money while people are being thrown out of their homes, lost their pensions, lost their 401ks, lost their IRAs, and these pigs are taking money in terms of bonuses.
Yeah, you talk about having no sense of decency. Here's another quote I read every single week from Forbes, the magazine of millionaires. They had an article called World's Billionaires 2010, and one of the line I always read is, most of the richest people on the planet have seen their fortune soar in the past year. Huh? Isn't that nice?
Well, you know what? You know, most of the reason why these companies are still making money, and I've been in the economic field for a long time, 30 years as a matter of fact, is because they're cutting people's pay.
Sure.
They're cutting people's benefits. They're cutting everything to the hilt, and they're making a lot of money doing it.
Well, of course.
And who caused it? They did. They caused it, and they're putting it on the middle class and the roots of this country, because they can get away with it, because nobody in the politicians who are a bunch of crooks.
Well, here's the deal. At the beginning of the show, we, Julian and I, were talking about, they had this teabagger rally in Arizona. They had 400 people turned out for it, and it was the lead story. I don't know, about 3 months ago, the AFL-CIO had a demonstration on Wall Street bringing up exactly, Rudy, what you were talking about. And there was about 2,000 or 3,000 people there. It got no media coverage whatsoever. I mean, the union said, hey, we'll provide live feeds. And maybe I'm wrong. Maybe, you know what, I think there was a sign. It's what I always say. They'll have whole big articles about these teabaggers. In fact, what's that, USA Today, they had this article called "The Tea Party People Speak." And so they had these, Julian printed it out for me. It was about 8 pages long.
Yeah.
And then, I mean, do you ever see, and I wonder, Rudy, if you're even aware of it, there were 20,000 people in Detroit in at the end of June at a big conference saying exactly the same things you were. And it got a little play in the Detroit papers, but nationally it didn't even make a blip. So you got 20,000 people in Detroit saying we've got to stop this looting of the middle class by the wealthy. No coverage whatsoever. You got 400 people chanting USA, USA in in Arizona, and they're the lead story. Something's wrong here, that's for sure.
You're listening to Night Call with Peter Werby and Julene Jordan on 101 WRIF. Peter and Julene are taking your calls at 313-298-WRIF.
That's what we do.
We'll be taking more of your calls right after this.
Feels like time's running out. Maxed out on your credit cards, collection calls are coming every day, and you're two payments behind on your mortgage. You need help. We're Credit Card Relief, and we've been helping people just like you for nearly a decade. Call Credit Card Relief right now. The consultation is free and the relief is real.
Call 866-290-8282. Not available in all states. Call 866-290-8282. That's 866-290-8282. If you want a new computer but think you can't get credit, think again. Just call Tronics Country right now. No matter what your credit status is, now you can own a brand new desktop or laptop computer. Your approval is guaranteed as long as you have an active checking account and can afford small weekly payments. With Tronics Country, there's no credit check. You will not be turned down. Call right now and order your new computer. You'll also get a free color printer and a free digital camera. Just call 800-990-2258. But that's not all. Call right now and you'll also get a free 22-inch high-definition TV with your paid purchase. You heard right. A free TV with your new computer. All you need is an active checking account and your approval is guaranteed. Don't wait. Call Tronics Country right now. Call 800-990-2258. That's 800-990-2258. 800-990-2258.
101 WRIF.
Everything that rocks.
Detroit's Rock Station. 101 The Real Riff.
I heard about this company dumping toxins in local rivers, and I called their executives to say stop, but I never got through to anyone except secretary after secretary. In the meantime, the rivers are being destroyed, birds and fish are dying, and the local kids are getting sick with cancer. So I organized a huge protest, and we actually got the company shut down. And everyone starts celebrating until we realize that half the town's now unemployed. The welfare offices can barely handle the overload. People are being kicked out of their homes, and to top it all off, the rivers are still contaminated. The birds and fish are still dying, and most of the kids with cancer are twice as sick because they can't get the health care they need since their parents lost the health insurance they had when they worked for the company that dumped all the toxins in the first place.
Saving the world isn't easy, but saving a life is. And just one pint of blood can save up to 3 lives. Visit bloodsaves.com to learn more. This public service announcement was brought to you by the Ad Council.
My name's Rachel, and I'm 10 years old. I like riding my bike, playing soccer, and in 8 years, I'll be an alcoholic. I'll start drinking in middle school, just at parties. My friends will drink, so I will too.
Kids who drink before age 15 are 5 times more likely to have alcohol problems when they're adults.
My parents won't really know what's going on yet. I mean, I'll do okay in school, but when I drink, I'll do some things I don't really want to do. So by the time my parents talk to me about it, alcohol won't be my only problem.
Alcohol affects their judgment and their future. So start talking before they start drinking.
My parents won't believe it could happen to me.
For more information on teens and alcohol, and to learn what you can do, visit the web at stopalcoholabuse.gov. Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, the Ad Council, and this station.
We're back with more Night Call on 101 WRIF. Voice your opinion at 313-298-WRIF. That's 313-298-9743. Here are Peter and Julie.
All right, thank you very much, and welcome to our final segment at 1 a.m. Barbara Ehrenreich, author, and author most notably of Nickel and Dimed, although, as we were saying earlier, Jolene, my favorite book, Dancing in the Street, A History of Dancing. It's absolutely incredible. You know, one of the things that sticks out in my mind is that about 300 or 400 A.D., at this religious meeting, you know, one of these big confabs that they'd have, that the church fathers are complaining that the people are still under the thrall of Bacchus, and they're into partying and dancing and what have you. 1,000 years later, like in 1400, they're still complaining about the same thing.
Really?
Yeah, and the churches did not used to have pews, and she says, from looking at historical evidence, the reason that they put pews in churches was to stop people from dancing, because people would get into these ecstatic states, and
yeah.
And they had, what was it, the tarantella?
Interesting.
That during the Middle Ages, that people would dance, whole villages would begin dancing and twirling, sort of like a Grateful Dead.
Sounds like some of the festivals I go to.
yeah. And, exactly. And they would, and hundreds and hundreds of people from one village would dance to the next. And
right on.
It's quite wild.
I think we need to bring that back.
And also, Matthew
Stein. Get rid of the pews!
Yes. When technology fails, a manual for self-reliance. What to do when everything falls apart. Here is what Jerry says. He wrote into CallTalkYes at yahoo.com. He says, it ain't really the old fart that needs some symbol of phallic inadequacy strapped to his side. It is the easily angered nutsoid that either has too much to drink or forgot to take his Xanax and might grab it up when he snaps. That's scary.
Or took too much Xanax and drank.
And drank. Always a bad subject. Yeah.
Yeah.
Garrick writes, I work for a local public school as a custodian, and a mere custodian. But, you know, I always say, who would you rather have go on strike, right? Lawyers or custodians?
I'll tell you what, those
people that work here?
Yeah, wonderful.
Yeah.
They keep it real nice, and they're very much appreciated.
I work for a local public school as a custodian. Our jobs are being outsourced at the blink of a dime. It falls into the category, wow, he wrote this from his BlackBerry. It's hard. You talk of, well, actually he wrote later and said he was sorry about all the spelling. But that is happening. And, for instance, bus drivers that we depend on for the safety of our children. You know, they're not all like the bus driver in The Simpsons, right? So the guy I know in Ann Arbor, he was a Teamster bus driver.
Yep.
Again, made a living wage because of his union. And what they want to do is turn it over, privatize it, and turn it over to people making $8 an hour. And Gaia bless you if you're making $8 an hour. It's not like you're less than human. But it's too bad that we allow companies to pay that little a wage. Other countries have, like, what, $12 an hour minimum wage, like Germany.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, we're down the tubes, aren't we? But who's we here? That's what we were talking
That's
about.
Right.
They're not down the tubes. Remember we were saying earlier, some trillion dollars in cash reserves that non-financial firms are holding. Whereas we look around our neighborhoods, and even rich ones, let alone middle class, working class, you get into the poor, man, it ain't doing real well. We were talking about this march in Detroit that's going to be Saturday, August 28th, led by UAW President Bob King, and also PUSH Coalition President Jesse Jackson for good, decent economic policies, an end to the wars in Iraq and Afghanistan. And Tom writes into CallTalkYes@yahoo.com. I'll be there, and I'm inviting my brother, who works at the Fort Street Post Office. He is in building maintenance and belongs to a union, but listens to Michael Wiener. Well, I won't even say who that really is. and reads his books. Just go figure. Yeah, what would a union man? Doesn't he realize that Michael Wiener wants to savage his union and drive his wages down?
That's right.
He says, I'm also inviting my cousin's husband, who is a Teamster retiree and watches the guy that writes in the blackboard and is always tuned into Fox News. Man, why do people do that? One more, I think. Let's see. Oh, yeah, about open carry and alcohol consumption. Isn't it illegal to carry a firearm while under the influence of alcohol? Well, I certainly think so. Seems to me, I've read in newspaper articles that even police officers have gotten into trouble when they've had their service weapon in their possession while drinking. Yeah, I think so. It's a good idea. Don't you think? Okay, wow, we've got lots of calls, not too much time. Let's go through them a little quicker. Here's Heather in Royal Oak. Hi, Heather. It's Peter and Jolene. Thanks for joining us.
Oh, thank you for, in any case, first time I happened to listen to your show, thank you. I so needed a good laugh today, and you two are fantastic.
Well, thank you.
Okay. Let me start by saying that being a volunteer member, many of my friends, family, are Chamber of Commerce in Pontiac.
Okay.
So we're handing out the T-shirts and doing our part to make things run smoothly and make sure everyone has a good time.
At the Arts Beats and Eats, it's now coming to Royal Oak, right?
Well, I'm now a Royal Oak resident, so I've been staying abreast of this. I think I have the solution to make everyone more comfortable. Are you ready for it?
Sure, go ahead, Heather.
Great. Well, I've lived in Royal Oak now for, 8 years. In any case, my first concern, I want your take on it, because in listening to you, I respect your attitude, your opinion about things,
But go ahead. Give me yours.
Well, why the $3 admission? If anybody needed an admission and needed help being struggling, Pontiac definitely did.
Yeah.
But that, okay, having said that, what's your take on that?
Are they're still doing the admission this year?
$3 admission.
$3, yeah.
Was it
two yet last year.
Wasn't there an admission in Pontiac?
Nope, totally free.
No.
There was last year.
You know what, Heather? At the end of it, they had a $2 admission. I think what they were trying to do, I mean, I stopped going to the Pontiac Arts Beats and Eats because you couldn't walk down the street. The crowds were so intense.
Specifically the $2 because I was working, so I had a pass, and there was a big long line of people paying the money, and I went around them.
I think what you may have seen is actually people buying tickets to purchase.
No, I know what you're saying. All right. We're going to have to go quickly through that, but there was an admission charge on it.
And Kid Rock put up $20,000 last year so that they could, so it would go on.
Oh,
so
that's great.
And he has a stage named after him. I'm not sure if that continues. Yeah. I imagine.
But Heather, real quickly, what do you think about people bringing sidearms to it?
I have the solution. You ready?
Go ahead.
Okay. When people pay their admission, we have volunteer psychiatrists on hand, and you're given a psychiatric evaluation in order to be able to bring your firearm. And again,
Wait. Let's leave it at that. Okay. And I think most of these guys would fail. All right, Heather. Thank you. I'll see you. Well, I don't know. I'm all right. I had an idea for it. All right. Thank you very much. I was thinking about getting people together and standing kind of on the periphery of it and having signs, danger, men with loaded guns inside.
No.
Don't do that? Okay.
Don't do it. Don't scare the little kids. They're already scared enough of these guys.
All right. I won't do it.
I think you should just, like, grumble under your breath with these guys.
I don't even want to. I mean, I wonder, what are you going to do? I mean, anybody that's crazy enough to want to do that is, I'm not going to start up with them. Here's Mike in Dearborn. And that's what they like that, too. They like to frighten people, I think.
True.
Here's Mike in Dearborn. Mike, hi. You're on the air.
Hey, Peter. First of all, thank you for continuing to do the show. We certainly need it.
Sure.
Second, I just wanted to say just something real quick. The march downtown, I mean, it's going to be great. I think that, something else that we could all do is, talk to our friends, talk to our neighbors and our family members who might be, maybe of the right-wing persuasion. And when we talk to them, really sort of bring up issues of self-interest. And what I mean by that is, start talking to people about, hey, what do you think about, what you're going to do for retirement? What's going to happen, to your children as they go out into the workforce and things like that? And I've found that if you talk to people about these things, and you don't really bring up right or left, Republican or Democrat, people are generally in agreement with what we're saying. And because it just seems like good common sense, things that, we should do. Certainly people should be taken care of when they retire, and certainly the job should be there for people. And I think the more we do this sort of stuff where we just kind of not really put it in terms of left versus right, but really just put it in terms of common sense and what's just good for the, you know, for the common people. Because let's face it, a lot of our family, friends, and neighbors who are Republicans really have no business voting Republican. I mean, a lot of them probably make less than $50,000 a year. But I just think if we all did that, you know, we could probably get some more of these people off the Republican crack.
Well, I agree. I mean, it's got to be some level of psychosis or something like that. I mean,
A lot of what it is I think the values ideas, right? I mean, the Republicans really put forth all these sort of phony values that supposedly they believe in and stand for, and they don't. And for people out there who are, you know, maybe interested in doing this, and maybe they just don't feel, you know, confident or they don't really know how to approach it, there's a wonderful book called Don't Think of an Elephant. The subtitle is Know Your Values and Frame the Debate. I don't know if you're familiar with that book or not.
I'm not, but let's just get back, because we don't have a lot of time. But I was wondering, you're right. I mean, the average person, including, I can't remember who it was, the email that said that he has these right-wing relatives. I mean, do they not want to rebuild America by enacting industrial and trade policies that create jobs, encourage manufacturing, and put workers first? Do they not want to enforce the law regarding workers' rights, civil rights, industrial regulation, and the creation of fair and just educational, economic, and health policies? Do they really want to keep the wars in Iraq and Afghanistan going? Do they really not want to end a moratorium on the practice that forces hardworking Americans from their homes? This is what that march is all about. And if and Bob King, Jesse Jackson, and actually there's an enormous number of groups that are sponsoring this. Let's see, Metro Detroit AFL-CIO, a lot of unions, City Clerk, Janice Winfrey, Jobs with Justice, I don't even know, Labor Council. Oh, man, there are so many different groups. I don't even know if it makes sense to name them all. But the point being is that it's true, exactly what you said. Who in the world is against that, right? All right, thank you very much. I appreciate that very much.
And I'm getting really sick of guys named Todd. You know, yeah, it's a goofy name, okay? Hi, what's your name? Todd. I'm Todd.
And let's welcome Todd from Southgate. As you know, I actually think Todd is a cool name, although I now be increasingly associated with you, Todd, and that husband of Sarah Palin. But go ahead.
Oh, well, I thank you for putting my intro back on your show. That's
okay.
Awesome.
Yeah.
All right. Well, I'm listening to the usual socialist propaganda that you speak here on the radio tonight.
Right.
And I was wondering if you would like to set an example for your listeners here and just maybe level the playing field on your show and maybe purchase health insurance for your coworker Jillian there, and just as an example to equal out you guys, like you would like to equal out the rich and the poor, you know.
Well, it's very cynical. I actually don't want to equal out. What we're talking about is people that have this vast impacted wealth where other people have nothing. If I could afford to purchase health insurance for Jaleen, I would certainly do it.
Thanks, Pete.
You know, people have the misconception that everybody in radio is making a fortune.
Yeah.
I tell you, my friends, those days are long, long gone. And the same thing that's happening to every other industry in this country is happening to this one as well. But I don't know. We'll just leave that as a cynical remark and say thank you for that. Here is Will. Will, you're on the air. Where are you calling from? It doesn't say it up on the board.
Detroit.
Oh, go ahead. You're on the air.
Hello, Julian, and hello, Mr. Orby.
Hello.
The middle class representational government that you were talking of, letting the yahoos loose in Senate and what have you, good idea. Maybe a better way to fix our political problems is instead of saying people need to help or them or where are they, maybe it's I need to help, you need to help. start directing it as first person and second person instead of speaking in the third person, because we are lazy and waiting for a savior.
Well, I mean, I think there are some people, but I mean, think about, I go from the old, old Bob Dylan song, you know, don't follow leaders, watch your parking meters. But there's a difference between leaders, people that, that elevate themselves above the masses, that's us, and wind up being opportunistic and self-serving and what have you. On the other hand, there's leadership. And certainly at different times in our history, there's been charismatic leaders. I mean, we were talking about this march in Detroit on Saturday, August 28th, commemorating the similar march that Martin Luther King did. So Martin Luther King had the capacity with both his rhetoric and also his actions to electrify people. And you know, Barack Obama had a little of that, but it was, it's been so far all show and not a lot of go.
I totally agree that there's all show and no go.
I didn't say no. I didn't say no go.
Not a lot of go.
But we need to take the bull by the horns and lead ourselves and then pick a better leader out of the leading people.
Okay.
Instead of going for name association and going for elephant versus, you know, donkey.
Well, we got to get beyond that. But, like, for instance, if there are people that say, well, I don't want to go to a march, even though it's downtown Detroit on August 28th, or they say, I don't like marches, or I don't like the UAW, or I don't like Jesse Jackson, I say, okay. That's very cool.
Do you like your neighbors?
Yeah. I mean, go do something somewhere else. But if we don't start addressing these problems, and there's enough people predicting a double dip, in other words, a recession coming back at us, I mean, the economy is still based around this insanity called the stock market. You know, I printed something off, and I forgot it. It was called the Hindenburg effect, I believe. And it's something to do with the stock market, but it's all about how crazy this all is. It's people selling money, I don't even know how to describe it. I mean, it's not like stock represents any value of something concrete. They have an intrinsic value, so-called. And at some point, someone's going to say again, you know, there's no there, and boom, it's going to collapse. So we've got to be ready. And I don't mean ready like with this Matthew Stein, who is talking about, collapse and whatever, you know, drinking from mud puddles and eating beetles. I'm talking about how are we going to survive within our families, within our neighborhoods, within our communities. And like I've always said, we've talked about this, there are people in the Great Depression that had cars and went out to fancy restaurants and had nice clothes and what have you. But the vast majority of people were affected very dramatically and emotionally very negatively. When we're insecure about our lives, that's bad on our heads, very bad. All right, thank you very much. Here's Brad in Ypsilanti. Hey, Brad, you're on the air.
Hey, Pete, how are you doing today, bud?
Good, good, good.
Just curious, did you get a chance to watch Gasland yet? That documentary I was telling you about on HBO?
You know what? Where is it? Is it in on demand?
Yeah.
Well, I should go.
Oh, yeah.
It's under documentaries.
Oh, well, that, all right, it's, you know, it's sort of like, it's not even, I'm not even meeting it halfway. I got to go to it, right? It's not going to,
right.
Yeah.
Right. I told, I think it was Stephanie.
Yeah, Stephanie's great.
She's
answering her phone.
But that's
okay. Well, yeah, that's Gasland, and that's about this, this new way of extracting natural gas from under our communities, and it ain't real good. All right, Brad, thank you very much. Stephanie, we're going to have to say goodbye to Rob from Romeo and say we're sorry we can't accommodate him. But let's see, we will be here next Sunday. We won't be here on Labor Day Sunday.
Right.
Yeah. But go to my website, Peter Werbe, werbe.com. All the information about the march that could be the beginning of resistance and renewal in our country, and a lot of other things that are there as well. Jalene Jordan, thank you.
Thanks, Peter.
Stephanie, thank you as well. And, Rob from Romeo says your audience needs to listen to both sides of the equation. Well, all you got to do is turn on any radio and get these right-wing screamers. And we get one little teeny voice here, and these guys complain.
This is Night Call on 101 WRIF.
Peter will be right back with more Night Call right after this. Do you owe back taxes to the IRS that you can't afford to pay? Or are you stuck in a tax payment plan that's getting you nowhere? The IRS is now taking very aggressive actions, such as bank levies and wage garnishments. If you owe the IRS at least $15,000, call American Tax Relief. They've helped thousands of people like you eliminate up to 85% of their delinquent taxes. Call 1-800-493-8159. If you qualify, American Tax Relief can settle your tax debts for less than you owe, remove penalties and interest, and protect you from bank levies and garnishments. As a hardworking American, you do have rights. Call American Tax Relief for a free consultation and see how much money they can save you. Call 1-800-493-8159. If you qualify, you can save up to 85% on the taxes you owe. Call right now. 1-800-493-8159. That's 1-800-493-8159. Did you know the tap water in your home may be hazardous? Not to your health, but to your appliances and your wallet. Your home's hard water creates pipe-clogging line scale, and that can shorten the life of your water heater, ruin your dishwasher, and break down your washing machine. Lime scale deposits block the heating element, and that could be costing you an extra $1,200 a year in energy and wear. But you can remove lime scale without chemicals, magnets, or salts. It's easy with HydraCare, the patented device used worldwide. See for yourself at bestsoftwater.com. You simply clip HydraCare to your main water pipe. HydraCare removes and prevents lime scale buildup in your entire plumbing system. If your home has hard water, extend the life of your appliances with HydraCare. Try it risk-free. Just go to bestsoftwater.com. That's bestsoftwater.com. Or call now, 888-883-8187. That's 888-883-8187.
Detroit's Rock Station, 101 WRIF.
The Riff. 101 WRIF.
Everything that rocks.
Over there? Over there's the water. Whoosh, whoosh. And look at all this stuff I'm standing on. It's called sand, and it's everywhere.
This woman may sound silly to you and me.
It's made up of little tiny pieces of rocks. Teeny little pieces of rocks.
But to her 2-year-old son exploring the world around him, she makes perfect sense.
How does it feel when you touch the sand? Is it warm?
Uh-huh.
It's hard to hold in your hand, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Learning starts long before school does, and children are naturally curious. They want to learn, so follow their lead. Take simple, everyday moments, like sorting laundry or playing on the beach, and turn them into learning moments.
Is this water?
No.
Very good. This is sand. Oh, no, it's not food. It's sand. We don't eat sand.
Turn everyday moments into learning moments. Find out how at pornlearning.org. Brought to you by United Way and the Ad Council.
McGruff, the crime dog, here with my nephew Scruff. Get a pencil and write down an important address. It's for the new McGruff comic activity book.
And it's full of me.
The address is
Scruff McGruff, Chicago, Illinois, 60652.
Hey, Scruff McGruff, Chicago, Illinois, 60652. Tells you what to do about guns and about bullies and drugs and about strangers who want to give you a ride. And it's full of games and puzzles too. So for your free copy of my new comic activity book, just write Not bad.
Can I do it again?
One more time. You'll be helping me take a fight on a crime.
A public service message from this station, the U.S. Department of Justice, the Crime Prevention Coalition, and the Ad Council.
Hey, Dad.
What?
I can't get the ketchup bottle open.
Here, let me try. Here you go.
Thanks.
You don't have to be a hero to be a hero. When you adopt a child from foster care, just being there makes all the difference. To learn more, call 1-888-200-4005. A public service announcement brought to you by Adopt U.S. Kids, the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, and the Ad Council.
101 WRIF and WRIF HD1 Detroit.
Now, Night Call is back on 101 WRIF Detroit. Here's your host, Peter Werby.
Thank you very much for joining me. Peter Werbe here with you. It's a real privilege to bring back to this broadcast Barbara Ehrenreich. She's one of the country's foremost essayists. She's the author of 16 books, and many of them I'm sure you've heard of, the most famous one, probably Nickel and Dimed, and many others as well. And I've been reading her for a long, long time. In fact, when we get her on the air, I don't know whether this will strike her as odd or not, but I remember when she and a co-author Deidre English wrote Complaints and Disorders, The Sexual Politics of Sickness, and Witches, Midwives, and Nurses, A History of Women Healers. Had a great influence on me when those were written in the 1970s. I think we last spoke with Barbara Ehrenreich when she did a delightful, wonderful book called Dancing in the Streets, A History of Collective Joy. Bait and Switch, and also Nickeled and Dimed, and This Land is Their Land, Reports from a Divided Nation, are somewhat grim. Dancing in the Streets, though, and with the title, of course, of the Martha and the Vandellas song on the different side of things. But speaking of sides, one of the things that we're always told to do is keep an up state of mind. Who doesn't think that it's better to, not better, to have a great attitude, to be up, to have a, remember there's even a famous book, The Power of Positive Thinking, and that was just written decades and decades ago, yet that's a common phrase. Well, Barbara Ehrenreich has some comments on that and even thinks that positive thinking may have created the Great Recession. Her latest book is called Brightsided, How Positive Thinking is Undermining America. You'd think the opposite would be true, but let's check in with her. Barbara Ehrenreich, welcome back to the Peter Werbe Show.
Good to be with you again, Peter. And I'm glad you mentioned my book, Dancing in the Streets, A History of Collective Joy. I always like to emphasize that I wrote that book so you can't call me a sourpuss. I wrote the book on joy, right?
You did. I was going to say that if it wasn't for this one, if it wasn't for that one, rather, Dancing in the Street, people would say, wow, this is one grim author. But how in the world could positive thinking undermine America? Barbara Ehrenreich, that's supposed to be what we all need to keep up, right?
Well, I very much question that in my book, Brightsided. I think that there's a real danger in trying to just see the bright side of things, just to be optimistic, forcing yourself to ignore sort of negative things, facts that might be creeping in to your field of vision and so on. And that's gotten us as Americans into a lot of trouble. Just the fact that we had such high levels of personal debt in 2007 when the crash started, when the downturn started, you know, that was, a lot of that is predicated on everybody thinking, it's all right if I put this on my credit card, it's all right if I refinance my home to get the money to redo the kitchen or something, because everything's going to be good. Everything's going to turn out fine. And that's one consequence of it, was it led us into this huge dependence on debt.
Yeah, well, it's a zeitgeist, the spirit of the times of enthusiasm. That always happens when times at least are good for a lot of us. I should say, when Barbara Ehrenreich wrote Nickel and Dimed, we weren't in any great recession. We were in a period of so-called prosperity. Was it 1994? I can't remember.
Well, no, that was about 2000.
Okay, that was
2001. It was published.
Yeah.
No, there's an example. I was writing about the conditions of life among the working poor, who, you know, I had in a sense joined by going out and working in a lot of entry level jobs that paid near the minimum wage, so a little bit above in my case, I'd like to point out. And it was pretty grim. And when I talk about that book now, I have to tell people, you know, however grim that was, those were the good old days.
That's amazing. The book is bright.
You know, it's just, and what has happened since, for example, is that those low-wage jobs that it seemed in the year, say, 2000, that just anybody could walk out and get, and like myself, without experience or, you know, just filling out the application form, and then they slap the uniform on you or the vest, and you're in. Those have dried up.
Yeah, and I know certainly in a lot of those service jobs, and they do teamwork. They put this great emphasis, almost this this Japanese model, where everyone gets together and they have this great team spirit for Walmart or for some of the fast food restaurants, and it's supposed to get everyone up, confident, providing great service, cheery smile to the customer. I mean, on the face of it, although I wouldn't like to work at Walmart and be forced to do a lot of cheers and rah, 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 but when you talk about priding ourselves as positive people, being cheerful, optimistic, and upbeat, I mean, is the opposite dour and pessimistic and, uncheery?
No. I mean, first, the one thing I'd like to suggest, since, before we make dualities like opposite, or not, is that what about just showing, acting the way you feel, huh?
Yeah.
What about just a certain amount of emotional spontaneity with other people? And being able, sometimes that's going to mean you crack a joke. Sometimes it's going to be mean you're going to say, hey, I've been having a miserable time recently because of such and such. But we are under pressure to always act as if everything was fine and that we're really enthusiastic about whatever our job is or whatever we have to do. And that's an act. That's a performance. That's not, being able to really interact directly and spontaneously with other people. But the other way, in which I want to take that on, that question, is, the opposite, if you want to use that word, of positive thinking, which means just trying to screen out everything negative and so on, would be negative thinking and just assuming that everything is going to go wrong, everything is going to, fail. That's kind of crazy, too.
Yeah.
You don't know that. I know people who think that way, and they're kind of deluded. The alternative would be to kind of be realistic, take in as much data as you can about what's going on and try to figure out what the problems and obstacles might be and then how you're going to overcome them.
Mm-hmm. Well, there's a difference, too, besides one's personal demeanor and how they react and relate to the phenomena in their life, whether things are going well or not. But on the commercial end, for instance, in different cultures, people have often complained that when you go into Korean markets, you don't get much of a welcome, that they're pretty just straight-faced and because they don't know you. And you walk into a Lebanese market, and it's very frequently, my friend, welcome. And so actually, the Korean market in many ways is more authentic because, this is, you're a stranger to that person, and where the other one has sort of a commercial falsity to it, right?
No, it may be that Lebanese person behind the counter is really looking forward to being your friend. I mean, some of us are sociable. Some of us, do really enjoy interactions with other people. What I don't like is when I go into that chain store and I get a plastic smile. Oh, how are you today? Can I help you? That where I know it's a performance. I know it's something that a person has to do to hold on to her job, and it just, I don't want to respond at all to that.
Well, I was going to say, when you said that about the person may want to be your friend, I was going to say, Barbara Ehrenreich, that is positive thinking if I've ever heard it. But the book is Brightsided, How Positive Thinking is Undermining America. It's published by Picador, and it was a New York Times bestseller in hardcover. It's now paperback. There'll be a link on my website as well, peterwerbe.com, W-E-R-B-E. Also, Barbara Ehrenreich has her website as well. It's Barbara Ehrenreich, which is E-H-R-E-N-R-E-I-C-H, and it's .com, correct?
That's right.
Yeah, yeah. And if it's hard to get while you're driving, you can go to my site. Well, I guess ultimately, and I know you from, as I said, from so many of your thoughtful books in the past, and this is right in line with it, that in many ways you have bigger fish to fry than just whether people are authentic in their smile when we come into a market. And we began to talk about that, about how, you know, that it actually created a larger attitude for thinking, wow, anything's possible with the economy, and we'll go way into debt, or we'll buy houses that are, on the face of it, are way overvalued, but everything will be great. So maybe we ought to talk a little more about the consequences that are dramatic in our lives. Like, for instance, now that people are facing such levels of unemployment unseen since the Great Depression, as everyone is fond of saying, and yet there are all sorts of books out that tell people, this is a wonderful opportunity for you, even though you got fired from your job from 27 years, and what you have to do is just get a better attitude. You can overcome this. This is a new voyage, and that you don't like that at all, do you? Neither do I. But tell us how you approach that in Brightsided.
Well, it approached me first. I'd never thought about this positive thinking or anything until that 10 years ago, just before the publication of my book Nickel and Dimed, 9 years ago, I guess, when I was being treated for breast cancer, which was dismal. I have nothing good to say about that whole experience. It was awful. And what shocked me is I kept being told by acquaintances, friends, medical people, that whether I got better or not really would depend on my having a positive attitude. And I had to be positive, otherwise how could my body fight the disease? Now, I doubted that at the time, and I was right to doubt it. We now have, just in the last 2 years, a lot of studies that completely put that to rest. Unfortunately or not, your recovery from cancer does not depend on your own attitude. But that upset me, and it particularly didn't like the kind of extreme of that, which was that not only should you feel positive about your recovery, but you should feel positive about the cancer itself, that this is a great experience for you, that you're going to come out of it being kind of more evolved, more spiritual, better, deeper sort of person. And that it was, in fact, and I'm quoting this word, used again and again, a gift. The cancer is a gift in that sense. And all I could think of is, wow, if that's your idea of a gift, get me off your Christmas list.
Well, yeah. You know, I found actually, although that was very, because it was so personal, because you had gone through the experience, I mean, how dramatic it was and how dramatic it was presented in Brightsided. But I thought, can't one have both attitudes? I mean, isn't it, on the face of it, someone, I remember you quoting somebody, said if they had the choice of whether to go through the cancer experience or not, they would do it again. And I could almost, if you would have been writing the text in pen, you probably would have gone through about four pages, you know, with the pressure you would have been putting on the page. But I thought, I mean, that's her perception. I mean, why is that a problem?
I guess I was being quite subjective here. I was going through one of the worst experiences of my life, no question. And I had a lot of anger and angry questions. Like, why do we have an epidemic of this disease, breast cancer, when we have no idea what causes it?
Mm-hmm.
Why aren't we really, really focused on that? Why are the so-called treatments so toxic and so debilitating? That's another question I had. You know, something bad happens to me. I want to know what's going on. I want to understand as much as possible how you could keep this from happening to another person, say my daughter. you know, this is not something I want to wish on someone. And if somebody feels it was one of the best experiences of their lives, like Lance Armstrong has said about his cancer, testicular cancer, then the moral conclusion would be, hey, everybody should get cancer.
Yeah.
Let's not do anything to stop it. Let's try to spread it, because we don't want anybody left out of this wonderful experience. And obviously, that's not how we feel. We understand that this is not something, however much we want to look back in retrospect and say, well, I did grow from that difficult experience, it's not something we want to wish on other, on the people we love.
Well, I'm thinking that if I'm sure I would my reaction would be very, very much like yours. And if I was to be diagnosed with cancer, I would just, the first thing I would think about is, I'm dead, you know, and if I would, and I would try my best to keep an, you know, a somewhat, if you will, a bright side outwardly, but inwardly, I would not be feeling very good about it. And I suspect if I recovered from it, I would have those same feelings that this was a years of terror, terrible toxic treatments and what have you. But increasingly what we find is people, you know, like with couples. So with, I know a couple, the wife has a form of cancer, and he says, you know, we're battling cancer. And so this idea that I don't know, what can you say? I mean, maybe I'm searching for the phrase. I just want to keep coming up with your title. You know, keeping a bright side to make the person feel like they're not suffering this alone, even though they obviously are. That doesn't seem like the worst thing in the world. But are you saying that people really aren't looking at the roots of this and why we have a cancer epidemic in this country?
Oh, yeah, that was one of the first things that occurred to me. But also, you know, just from the point of view of the person who's actually enduring the disease and the treatments and so forth, is, you know, we shouldn't be telling that person how to feel. We shouldn't be saying you have to feel positive or upbeat or whatever. We should be willing to listen to how they do feel, even if that is painful sometimes. And I think this unwillingness to say, yeah, it's an awful experience, how do we help people with it, what are we going to do to prevent it, and so on, comes in part from, you know, our well-known problem of compassion fatigue. Don't bother me with your problems. I don't want to hear. I just want to see you smiling. And the same extends to the unemployed. Losing a job is a very devastating experience, which can take people, I mean, some people just never, ever recover, either financially or psychically, from that experience. And yet people who lose their jobs, which, as you mentioned, they can find all the self-help stuff. They can tune in to Tony Robbins, well, I guess he just got yanked from TV, or somebody to tell them that it's really a great experience to lose your job. That it's doors opening to wonderful new opportunities. You should be grateful that this happened to you, et cetera, et cetera. And what is all this telling us? It's saying, you know, you have no right to complain about anything, except whatever is done to you or happens to you. And just put on a smiley face and move right on and accept the next situation.
Sure, and also that it's an individual occurrence. It's happening. You have been you have been made unemployed. You have contracted cancer. Whereas they have cancer maps and they're just identical with chemical and industrial facilities in areas. And when you have unemployment being a mass phenomena, it ought to be approached like that. Sure, we have to deal with it as individuals. And we know the kind of depression often that happens and distress within families. So, you know, trying to deal with that emotionally is a good idea. But like during the 1930s, as I know you know, Barbara Ehrenreich, there was like great organizations of the unemployed
I've read so many times about you know, long-term unemployed today, people who've been searching for a job for a year or more. And they'll always be quoted saying, but I'm trying to stay positive.
Mm-hmm.
And I want to shake them and say, hey, you know what? You're allowed to be angry.
Sure.
You know, there's a reason to be angry here. When a society, an economy like ours seems to have no use for the talents and skills and hard work of so many individuals, that makes me mad.
It also makes you mad, doesn't it, in your book, Bright Side of How Positive Thinking is Undermining America, that there are a lot of people making a lot of money off of trying to convince people to be positive.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Give us an idea.
This is an industry.
Yeah.
It's the motivational speakers. That's a big part of it. It's hard to get, I'll tell you, Peter, it's very hard to get numbers on the side, you know, and I did my best. And we're certainly talking in the billions of dollars, but annually. But they're the motivational speakers, and they're usually paid by corporations who will bring in the motivational speaker to pump up people who either know they're going to expect they're going to be laid off soon or have just survived massive layoffs so that now the survivors have to do twice the work they did before. So there's a whole motivational speakers, and each one of them has his, and it's usually his, own, you know, book out and DVD and so on also to sell. There are whole lines of products. There's this company called Successories that makes nothing but motivational products, posters to put on the wall, coffee mugs, you know, little other items that are supposed to keep reinforcing that positive attitude. There's a lot of cynicism about this stuff in among a lot of workers, too, because, you know, they know that when you see those posters going up on the wall, it means layoffs are coming. You know, it's just a form, it's become a form of management. Management by expecting, by forcing people to be act optimistic and cheerful at all times.
Yeah, the opposite of this, and I'm not necessarily, you know, never mind. I will say I'm not necessarily advocating this. They started talking about layoffs in Greece. They have a general strike. They announced layoffs here, and they have counselors for people.
Yeah.
I mean, there's
life coaches.
Yeah. So this can ultimately, these are political and social questions that you're addressing, and not just what degree of negativity or positivity that people should have. Am I correct?
Oh, yeah. No, you know, I've asked myself for a long time, why do Americans put up so rather passively and agreeably with so much economic dislocation? And I would use the word insult, you know, the way that you can be kicked around by your health insurance company, by anything else. And we're fairly passive about all this compared to, well, say, the French, too, you know, where people are just will not put up with things that Americans routinely take for granted. And I think part of the answer is that so many of us have bought into this idea of having to act, quote, positive all the time. And, you know, at least put up a good front.
Well, don't you think that the alternatives to address these problems socially and economically and politically really aren't present? I mean, that we've been atomized to the point that there's no kind of collective manner in which we can address the problems that we share collectively.
That's a big part of it. And certainly the positive thinking ideology intensifies that sense of isolation. It's, you know, everything is up to you. You control the universe. It all depends on how you see the world, just you know, inside your own head. I find that basically really disempowering, because what makes me feel confident in those rare moments these days when I do feel very self-confident politically, and it's pretty rare, is knowing that there are so many other people who feel the same way, knowing that Americans have made dramatic and important changes for the better in our lives over the years and the centuries by banding together and exercising, you know, collective power.
Yeah, and I think there's things going on, like the new president of the UAW, Bob King, has called for a march later this month on August 28th to address the problem of jobs and the whole economy. He's calling for peace and end to the war in Iraq and Afghanistan. And there's also a big march on Washington with the same goals on October 2nd. So here, suddenly, the forms of addressing these problems, which we suffer as individuals, may be available in a collective sense. Well, I want to thank you so much for being a guest on my show. Barbara Ehrenreich has written Bright Sided, How Positive Thinking is Undermining America. It was a New York Times bestseller in hardcover. It's available in paper by now, or now by Picador. And you can go to my website, Peter Werbe, WERBE.com, or Barbara's website, which is Barbara Ehrenreich, EHRENREICH.com. Barbara Ehrenreich, as always, a pleasure. Thanks for having joined me.
Oh, thank you, Peter. Nice to talk to you.
This is Night Call on 101 WRIF. Peter will be right back with another guest right after this. Did you know that life insurance rates are near record lows? If you don't have coverage, listen to this. AccuQuote can help save you up to 70% on a term life policy that's right for you. Pick up the phone and call AccuQuote at 800-654-2075. AccuQuote has helped hundreds of thousands of people save a fortune on their life insurance. Here's how. AccuQuote monitors hundreds of top-rated life insurance products so you can get the lowest rates. For example, a healthy 40-year-old can buy $500,000 of 10-year level term for less than $21 a month. Rates for women are even lower. A short 5-minute call is all it takes. Call AccuQuote for a free life insurance quote at 800-654-2075. Rates, policy forms, and availability vary by state. Find out how much you can save on life insurance. Call AccuQuote for your free quote. 800-654-2075. That's 800-654-2075.
101 The Riff.
Mom?
Dad?
How long should I wait for you?
Mom?
If I'm at soccer practice,
what if something happens? Will you come get me?
There's no reason not to have a plan in case of an emergency.
Mom, if you're not home, should we go to the neighbor's house?
And some extremely good reasons why you should.
Can you tell me?
Everybody should have a plan. Take 5 minutes to talk about where you'll meet and how you'll get in touch with each other in an emergency. For other things you can do to be prepared, visit www.ready.gov. A public service announcement brought to you by the U.S. Department of Homeland Security and the Ad Council.
Energy Hog the team. Infiltrate the house and waste some energy.
No problem. It's got leaky windows
and no attic insulation.
Perfect. Now go wild and waste some wattage.
The Mitchell House. A house like many others. Except this one's under attack by energy hogs. They show up anywhere energy's being wasted.
Talk to me, hogs.
The washer. It's not Energy Star rated.
Outstanding. What about the thermostat?
Not programmable.
Looks like we're living high on the hog.
Only one person has the power to get rid of energy hogs. You.
Hold on! Someone's home!
And he's got energy-efficient light bulbs!
To find out how you can find Energy Hogs, log on to EnergyHog.org. You'll find fun games and lots of tips on making your home more energy efficient.
Now he's installing Energy Star appliances.
Not Energy Star! That's it! Get out of there! I'll get you, EnergyHog.org!
Hey! Wait for me!
Brought to you by the Alliance to Save Energy, the Department of Energy, and the Ad Council.
If you want a new computer but think you can't get credit, think again. Just call Tronics Country right now. No matter what your credit status is, now you can own a brand new desktop or laptop computer. Your approval is guaranteed as long as you have an active checking account and can afford small weekly payments. With Tronics Country, there's no credit check. You will not be turned down. Call right now and order your new computer. You'll also get a free color printer and a free digital camera.
Just call 800-990-2258. But that's not all. Call right now and you'll also get a free 22-inch high-definition TV with your paid purchase. You heard right. A free TV with your new computer. All you need is an active checking account and your approval is guaranteed. Don't wait. Call Tronics Country right now. Call 800-990-2258. That's 800-990-2258. 800-990-2258.
What would you do if you had to choose between the buffalo and the giraffes? Between a flower or an elephant? What would you choose? What if you had to decide between a 100-year-old tree and a 1,000,000-year-old beech? Between drinking clean water or breathing clean air, would you make the right choice? Would there be a right choice? Now there's a way to help. Not just one, but all these things. Earthshare, the world's leading environmental groups working together. It's one choice we can all live with.
This ad sponsored by Ad Council and Earthshare.
Being a college freshman is supposed to be tough, but let me tell you about my schedule this semester. All 18 credits. Every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, I have American Lit at 8:05 a.m., and then I only have 15 minutes to get to my 9:15 Ethics and Value Theory class all the way across campus, then in the afternoon, Calculus 1. On Tuesdays and Thursdays, I have two lectures that go through lunch, Sociology of Families, then Intro to Microbiology, pre-med, and finally, I have a double lab that ends around 9 p.m. Anyway, I just wanted to say thank you.
If a kid will do whatever it takes to get through college, what will you do to send her there? Please support the United Negro College Fund and call 1-800-332-UNCF, because a mind is a terrible thing to waste. A public service brought to you by UNCF and the Ad Council.
Now, Night Call is back on 101 WRIF Detroit. Here's your host, Peter Werby.
Thank you very much for joining me. It's a pleasure to be with you. Peter Werby here. You know, what would you do, you, the radio listener, and what would I do if everything absolutely collapsed? I mean, when you have an economic crisis like we're in right now, you can always imagine the worst-case scenario. The worst-case scenario would be everything stops. No more food at the grocery store, no more electricity from when you switch on the light or whatever. I don't think necessarily that's going to happen, but there's always a good idea to, what do we say in the Boy Scouts, be prepared. Well, there's two things you could do. One would be to just put your head between your legs and kiss your butt goodbye, to be indelicate. But the other thing would be to pick up a book that's come my way. It's called When Technology Fails, a manual for self-reliance, sustainability, and surviving the long emergency. It's revised and expanded. The author is Matthew Stein, and Matthew Stein is a graduate of MIT. He majored in mechanical engineering. He's done a lot to design and build hurricane-resistant, energy-efficient, and environmentally friendly houses. Interestingly, he's an active mountain climber and serves as a guide trainer for blind skiers with the Ski for Light cross country program, and he resides with his wife in the High Sierra Mountains with near Lake Tahoe. That's where he's joining us. Matt Stein, welcome to the Peter Werby Show.
Oh, Peter, thank you so much for having me on your show today.
Glad to do it. Well, this is a book. It's huge. It's heavy. It's almost 500 pages. In the event, even of, say, an emergency through a tornado up here or in other parts of the country where people are listening to, hurricanes or what have you, earthquakes out where you guys are, why do we need 500 pages to be the Boy Scouts, be prepared? Why that much information?
Well, the book is really a Bible for emergency preparedness combined with survival plus green and healthy living. So it's really kind of the information to have at your fingertips for navigating this new
century where the world that we knew, that where everything was stable and always worked and you could buy what you want and trust that your 401ks would be there tomorrow and the next day and the next day, that world is kind of over. We're entering a new period now. And it, knowledge is power. You won't necessarily read the whole book, and you won't necessarily do a lot of the stuff in the book, but you want to have that insurance. You want to have that comfort zone, knowing that you have the basics for you and your family and that you're prepared at some level to deal with meltdowns. Now, having the book on your bookcase also means that if that day comes, and we all hope it never comes, but that's what insurance is about. You know, you buy car insurance and you hope you never get into a wreck.
Sure.
But you thank God you got the insurance if that day does come. So that day may come where you say, you know, maybe Pakistan and India threw some nukes at each other. Maybe the financial meltdown went ratcheted up to another level and things are really falling apart. And you say, I'm going to pull that book down and I'm going to up my level to the next level. I'm going to go to the next level of preparedness. And that's where that extra information comes in.
Mm-hmm. Or, as I said, just a natural disaster. Tornadoes here where we haven't had one come right through. Well, actually, one came right through Detroit. I forgot, maybe 15 years ago or something, did an enormous damage. But one of the things that I always think about in my house, if the electricity goes out, I've got a number of things prepared for heating, but I'm not going to have my furnace because it's driven by an electric fan.
That's right.
And so what happens if even the lights are out in your house for 4 days, the electricity? And a lot of people in Ohio and Michigan recently have suffered that because of the ice storms.
Yeah, I remember in Vermont. I'm from Vermont, and I wasn't there for the super ice storm 10 years ago, whenever it was. But I remember there's places in northern Vermont and eastern Canada that were out of power for 2 to 3 weeks because they had poles just snap like toothpicks all over. Now imagine if it's like it is in your area now where you said it's 12 degrees this morning. Imagine now if you got 3 weeks or 2 weeks or even 1 week without power, how much time does it take for your pipes to start bursting? You know, can you afford $20,000 to go and rip all the plumbing out in your house and replace it? I mean, I was a couple winters ago, I was down in Santa Cruz camping in some unusually warm weather, and that week turned in, it went from record warm to record cold. And my wife said, I'm sick, the weather changed, we've got to go home. I said, oh, let's just wait another day, no problem. When we got home, we had a furnace with, and the igniter on our furnace went out. And I got into the house, and all the plants were frozen. And I looked inside the toilet bowl and the tank, and it was bizarre. It was three-dimensionally filled with ice crystals. You could scoop your hand in there and just come up with a full of ice. If we had gotten back the following morning, every plumbing fixture, every piece of piping and inside the walls and underneath our house would have been burst. Now, in that case, it was just a broken part. But if it's a case of igniter, you know, of power going out, you might have 100,000, a million people in your area in that same case where their buildings, everything burst and everything broke. And if you don't have a little backup heater to protect you in that event, or you know how to drain your plumbing in the winter, and then you'll be stuck just like those other people. Now imagine trying to get a plumber out there to fix your plumbing if a half a million people are in the same boat as you.
And that's kind of information that's in your book, when Technology Fails. It's published by Chelsea Green. And, you know, it's interesting. This, you mentioned, I don't know if you said survivalism, but survival guide. And usually this kind of survival apocalyptic preparation is associated with the right wing, that usually their level of paranoia is much, much higher than the average person or people on the left. Does this book have politics?
The book does have some politics, because a significant portion of the book is devoted to green and clean living, and there's parts of it which says, okay, this is what's happening in our world. Now, I have a Bachelor of Science from MIT and scientific training. When I was doing the research to put this book together, the second chapter called Present Trends, Possible Futures, that's a synopsis of all of the best writings, scientific and eco-writings, of the state of the world and the trends in the world. And unfortunately, there's about a half dozen different trends that if you continue them out a few decades, they all end in collapse of our society. It doesn't mean we're going to collapse our world, but it means that if we continue doing business as usual, I can guarantee you with 100% certainty we will collapse our world and everything will fall apart and you'll be in the worst case scenario. So part of my book is about dealing with varying levels of those things falling apart, you know, what hitting the fan. And the other part, another part is saying, you know, we're not stupid people on this planet. We've got a lot of smart people on this planet. We can wake up and we can change our course. We can do this. You know, it's like we're in the Titanic headed for the iceberg, but I firmly believe that we can create a sustainable future, that we can avoid that iceberg, but we will not avoid it if we keep doing business as usual.
Well, one of the things, Matthew Stein, that gives you an indication of the possibility of collapse is the fact that you have the foreword to When Technology Fails by Richard Hindberg, famously known for his books on peak oil. So I take it for granted it is not just an accident that he's the one that you chose to write the foreword to your book.
No, it's no accident. In fact, when he wrote his first highly successful book, he'd written several before that, but his first big one was The Party's Over, and he recommended my book as like one of three or four books that everybody should have on hand to deal with future issues coming up in our world. And, you know, we hadn't met at the time, and I was wondering why my book was doing so well on Amazon in the first edition. And it turned out it was because Richard said great things about my book. So we did subsequently get to know each other, and he wrote the foreword to the new edition, which is fully revised and updated and 35% larger than the first edition.
Well, he is, of course, also famously known, as I said, for his work on peak oil, which is one of the possibilities that would lead potentially towards a collapse.
It certainly is. I identify sort of four main areas, four huge threats to the future of stability of our world as we know it, one of which is the eco threat, which is includes climate change, includes collapsing oceans, includes changing weather systems due to deforestation on the planet, and that's one of the big threats. And the second big threat is peak oil, and basically our world is run on a cheap, readily available, easily pumped, easily used high-density energy source, which is oil.
Yeah.
And
well, when
oil is going away.
Yeah, and particularly now, the pardon me, the Tata is coming online, the Indian car, selling at $2,500, and there's a billion Indians that want to be able to cruise the drive-ins, and what we do, cruise Woodward and Gratiot Avenues here in Detroit. Where is that all going to come from? Where in the world are they going to get the gasoline to fuel those little Tatas? Not out of their Tatas, I think.
Well, the thing is, whoever's got the money to buy it is buying it. I mean, China has secured a lot of oil, the world's oil supply. In fact, China, we're running short on a lot of key materials all over the planet right now to maintain our industrial society. As Richard wrote a book called Peak Everything, and he goes deep into great detail on that. And China's been securing, buying up mineral rights for key things like tungstens and rare earths in America. So, I mean, here we are now, we're selling off our future legacy to other countries that have a little more foresight and planning than we do.
Mm-hmm. The book is When Technology Fails, a manual for self-reliance, sustainability, and surviving the long emergency. It's revised and expanded. It's almost 500 pages. It's published by Chelsea Green. You can go to whentechfails.com. There'll be a link on my site as well, peterwerby.com. I'll give you the information again a little later. Let's go a little to the book. I mean, I'm trying to think somehow when this economic catastrophe hit here, I thought about was keeping warm. So I've got a lot of wood at my house. I've got an open fireplace. I've got a kerosene heater. But there's you need a lot more things to. In fact, maybe heat and warmth is even kind of down the line, right?
Well, heat and warmth is huge if you're in a really cold place like your area, and all of a sudden the power is out and your furnace fan doesn't work and maybe natural gas isn't flowing down the pipeline and water's not flowing. But water is actually the number one issue most of the time, and because most of us, you might not believe it, but most of us could live a month without food. You know, you may not like it, you may not enjoy it, you may not feel good, but you could really survive at least a month without food. Most adults could, maybe not small children, but adults could. without water, after a single day, you're in serious discomfort. And in 2 to 3 days in extreme heat, if you have to do physical activity, you know, people will start dying. People will start falling dead. So water is very, very important. And, you know, I once ran out of water climbing El Capitan in Yosemite in record-breaking heat, and it was horrible. I mean, my partner had asked me a question. I'm 150 feet out in a rope. He asked me a question. I'd try to answer. My tongue would stick to the roof of my mouth like super glue. And I start gagging and retching like I'm going to vomit right there. And we climbed the last night through till about midnight with our headlamps on. Key item in my grab-and-run kit, by the way, is a headlamp. And we found the nearest mud puddle and stuck our faces in it and drank. And you will do that. You'll drink out of the most disgusting ditch or duck pond if that's all you have to drink. And so I like to recommend to people in my grab-and-run kits to have devices, and I recommend specific devices, for filtering your water and treating your water so that you and your family are safe and can take scummy water and get good, clean, decent-smelling and tasting safe water out of that scummy ditch.
Well, I was going to ask Matthew Stein about ditch water. You talk about that in when technology fails, and somehow in some of the material I've read about your book, people always seem to bring up that like ditch water. Like that's the worst thing they can imagine. I can think about keeping myself alive a lot worse than that. I often I make a joke with my wife, which she does not like at all, that I said if it really came down to it, that she and I and our dog would just be sitting there waiting to see who went to sleep first.
Well, there's the famous Donner Party syndrome. I live in the town where the Donner Party had their infamous barbecue about 150 years ago. And
with people being served, yeah.
That's right. Aunt May, you know, when Aunt May died, then Aunt May went into the pot for some of those families. Now, surprisingly, there was a number of families and a number of cabins in the Donner Party, and some of the families had not a single death and did not resort to anything really disgusting like some of them did. And if they had my book with them, then they would have known that they could go out and peel the bark off of trees and go down to the green layer like the deer do when they're starving, and that green layer would keep them alive. And that's valuable information. Let me just give you a little anecdote here.
Well, before you do, tell us about ditch water, though. We left ditch water. Yeah.
Okay, if you've got the great MacGyver gadgets, like I'll give you a couple of wonderful MacGyver gadgets to have on hand, but then I also tell people how to do it the old-fashioned low-tech ways in a variety of ways. So the MacGyver gadget, you got your MSR, Katydyn, backcountry filter. It's got a carbon core. It's got a ceramic exterior that's cleanable or a pleated bacterial membrane. And you just put the tip of that in the water and you pump through the pump into a water bottle and you got clean, good-tasting water. And the carbon in the core takes out noxious chemicals. Like, you know, the people in New Orleans, they had floodwaters coming by, chemical plants and pig farms and all that wonderful stuff upstream. So you dip that in there, you get good, safe water. Now, there's another gadget called a SteriPen. Really cool gadget to have. Kind of like the little Men in Black movie. He'd pull his pen out of his pocket and say, look at the light, and click the button, and everybody's
yeah.
memory go away. Well, a SteriPen, you pull it out and you stick it in your water bottle and you click the button and the blue light flashes and all the bugs are zapped and gone. Only downside is it's got nothing to take out bad taste chemicals, and if it's scummy water, you know, meaning it's turbid and not clear, then the SteriPen is not effective in that. So you like to have both on hand, and I also like to keep a little backup of a little teeny bottle, tiny, tiny 1 ounce bottle called Polar Pure, and it's got iodine crystals in there. And water won't taste very good when you use this, but you can zap viruses and bugs, most bugs. There's a couple of really hard to kill bugs that your SteriPen will get and the filter will get, but chlorine and iodine and will not handle, and those are called Cryptosporidium, and they survive. They made 400,000 plus people sick in Milwaukee because it survived the town's chlorination system and got into the public water and killed about 111 people and made almost a half a million people sick. So that's a serious bug.
We often hear about what I was joking about, eating our dog eating us. What did you ever kitchen test any of this? And why, you talk talking about the best bugs, the best bugs to eat and everything. What gross us out a bit, Matthew Stein?
If you want the best bugs to eat when push comes to shove, then if it's good enough for your local robin or good enough for the local bear, it's good enough for people. So for instance, earthworms, they work. You know, squeeze the bellies or slice them open and take the dirt, because they eat dirt. Take the dirt out of the belly. You're not going to like eating dirt. Grubs in the local stump, those will work. The grasshoppers, people in Africa, they eat locusts and grasshoppers. Pull the heads off, pull the wings and the arms off. They got little nasty barbs on there that kind of wreak havoc with your throat. That'll work. Now, have I taste tested these? I've got to admit, I haven't been that desperate. I've fasted for 10 days in the past. So I have never been that desperate where I've been hungry without food for a day more than once, but out in the backcountry. But I have never gone so far as saying I got to eat that local salamander or that local worm or that local maggot. I haven't gotten to that point yet.
I'm trying to remember. Grasshoppers in Mexico, chalupas, is that there's a restaurant in Chicago, a Mexican restaurant, where they, if I'm saying the word right, excuse me, my Spanish-speaking friends, if I'm totally, I'm saying some total gringo,
Probably. I think I might have had a chalupa before, but I don't think it was a locust or a grasshopper.
Maybe you're right. Maybe I got it. But anyway, there's a Mexican restaurant in Chicago that specializes in that. But let's get back to it. All of this is, I love books like this because it, as you said, it not only has worst case scenarios, but it saves you from the information here can save you from the worst case scenario for you as an individual, because as you said, it talks about so many things having to do with the individual, how you can live a healthier life and to some extent off the grid, put a lighter footprint on the planet and all of that. But do you have a sense that things are just going to go to hell? Or I just think, like I said, the Boy Scouts, be prepared, right? But
be prepared, but I do feel that we're going to see huge bumps in the road. I don't feel that there's any magic wand that's going to be waved by Obama or anybody right now that's going to just make it all better financially. I think you're going to see a lot of problems. I'm hoping that we do the long-term infrastructure investment in our country to get off the oil habit, because if we don't, we will collapse. No question about it. It won't be pretty. So being prepared is, on the one sense, it's like, how can we collectively unite to change our course from collapse to sustainability? And individually, it's like the world is going to do what it's going to do. I'm going to do my best to change the course, but I'm also going to be ready. I'm not going to be like an ostrich with my head in the sand. I'm going to have my eyes open and be ready to do my best for myself and my family.
Well,
threat, though, is the bio threat, and that's current. Just a month ago, Miss Brazil, beautiful, beautiful woman, top five finalists in the Miss World pageant, went to the hospital, antibiotic-resistant infection. They pumped her full of antibiotics. That didn't work. They amputated her hands and feet in an attempt to save her life. That didn't work. She died anyways. These are real. In my book on when high-tech medicine fails, there's really great things to have on hand so that you can deal with antibiotic-resistant infections and superbugs that are coming down the pipeline. And these are real. Just think about it. A couple years back, this guy's getting married. He's got a persistent cough that won't go away. Flies to Europe to get married and honeymoon. The CDC is tracking him all over the world. That's the Center for Disease Control. They end up finally getting him to get off the public planes in Canada, and they send a private jet with guys in bunny suits, meaning the
hazmat suits
to keep the bugs off, to escort him back to a CDC center because he had extreme drug-resistant tuberculosis, and they were so worried about it getting out in this country. These threats are real, but there are non-patented herbal and other alternative medicines that work, but they're not pumped by there's no money to be made in them, so they're not pushed by the pharmaceutical companies, and the doctors don't know about them unless you're an alternative MD. And so if you don't have yourself armed with that information, you might end up like Miss World one of these days.
Yeah,
that would be a tragedy.
So much of it in the book, When Technology Fails, by Matthew Stein. And we'll just a few minutes left, so we'll be giving you final information about how to find this book. It's probably available in most good bookstores. Check your independence first, please. But before we do, I mean, I have a few basic things, like maybe the Red Cross or somebody would say have this minimum of stuff in case the lights go out and what have you. But you also talk about your grab-and-run kit, which is also known as a 72-hour kit, short-term emergency. What? And there's 20 items in there, so that would take us too long to name. But what as, A, get the book. B, what would you advise most people to have at a bare minimum?
Well, your grab-and-run kit has to have food, medicines, first aid, and basic extra clothing and shelter for you and your family for at least 3 days, because after an emergency, often the authorities are overloaded and they can't deal with it. But in the minimum, you want to have that backcountry filter. Specific recommendations on the website and in the book. Also, I always have a colloidal silver generator. That's the alternative med thing I was talking about, or one of them. And what that does is that makes a tiny charged silver particle in a solution, and it kills all known pathogenic bacteria, and it deactivates viruses. So with that, if there's something serious going around, it may not react as quite as quickly as a good antibiotic, but it works when the antibiotics don't work or when they're not available. I also always have a headlamp in there. That's it's like a flashlight that sticks on your head.
Mm-hmm.
And the new ones are great. They're so lightweight. The LEDs last for ages, and they're totally waterproof. Leaves your hands free. You can be working on the car in the rain with it. You can be carrying things wherever you point your head, the light beam goes. Always have a first aid kit. I keep a big kit in my grab and run box, but then I keep a little one that I can throw in a backpack if I have to go down the road without my car. And I always have inch and a half cloth tape, adhesive first aid tape, because let's face it, most of us, unless you're used to like running a lot and being in the backcountry, most people, if they have to hoof it down the road, they're not used to doing that. Mile or two down the road, they're going to blister up. And once those blisters pop, you're going to be in agony. You're not going anywhere. So before those blisters happen, you feel yourself getting sore. You whip those shoes off. You whip those socks off. Take a little bit of that sticky tape and ball it up and scrub your heels or wherever you've got a sore spot with the adhesive to take off the scummy dirt and oils. Then throw that away and put some fresh tape on those sore spots. Then you're back and running. You can go down the road if you have to.
Matt, let's do this. We're almost out of time. We got just a matter of seconds left. You wanted to end. You said you had a motto to leave us all with.
Yeah, here is my motto. I want everybody to do your best to change the world and do your best to be ready for the changes in the world. Now, thank you so much, Peter, for having me on today.
Well, I want to thank you, Matthew Stein. Matthew Stein is the author of When Technology Fails, A Manual for Self-Reliance, Sustainability, and Surviving the Long Emergency, forward by Richard Heinberg. And you can go to the website for the book, When Tech, T-E-C-H, WhenTechFails.com. There'll also be a link on my site, PeterWerbe.com. That's W-E-R-B-E.com. Thank you for all this important information. I hope we never have to use it, but as I've said a couple times during the broadcast, being a former Boy Scout, be prepared. Thank you, Matthew Stein.
Oh, it was my pleasure. It was my pleasure.
Thank you for listening to Night Call on 101 WRIF. The views expressed on the program are not necessarily those of the staff, management, or ownership of WRIF Radio. Now, stay tuned for more Riff Rock on 101 WRIF Detroit.
Show us your tats, me lord and lady. 101 WRIF presents the tattoo contest at this year's Michigan Renaissance Festival, August 21st and 22nd. Hit WRIF.com to upload a photo of your best tattoo, and you'll be in the running for a pair of tickets to this year's Renaissance Festival in Holly. From 101 WRIF, The Riff.
That's the sound of people throwing out their old dehumidifiers. They've replaced them with the energy-saving Wave Ventilation Unit. Wave Ventilation expels moisture, gases, and toxins trapped in your basement or crawl space and replaces it with drier, fresher air. The computerized Wave Ventilation requires no maintenance. There are no buckets to empty, no filters to change. And compared to a dehumidifier, it will save you hundreds of dollars a year in energy costs. One customer wrote,
I was stunned by the difference. I had had a dehumidifier for almost 20 years without ever getting rid of that musty smell. And now that smell is finally gone.
Wave can transform your home into a drier, healthier environment. Satisfaction guaranteed. Find out more about Wave Ventilation right now.
For free information, go to goodairnow.com. That's goodairnow.com. Or call 1-866-324-9481. That's 1-866-324-9481.
Detroit's Rock Station, 101 WRIF.
The Riff.
The Riff.
Hello, I'm Faith Hill. You know the expression, practice makes perfect? Well, maybe nowhere is that more true than in music. Music study is one of the most valuable ways that a student can spend time. A young person who practices and studies music reinforces teamwork, communication skills, self-discipline, and creativity. All the qualities that kids need to be successful in their other schoolwork. As parents, think about encouraging your children to try out several instruments at school until they find the one that really clicks. Talk to the school's music teacher about finding affordable lessons so your child can see his or her progress as time goes by. And please don't forget that your kids all have an instrument that's free and sounds wonderful, their voices.
A PSA brought to you by NENC, the National Association for Music Education, and the National Anthem Project, the campaign to restore America's voice through music education. Music, part of a sound education.
This is what you've all been waiting for.
101 WRIF and WRIF HD1 Detroit.
Settle down, people. Settle down.
The Riff.
Too long.